graduation of the two images from Kessler and from Frisbane. Today is heading those departments as images, and appropriately that also fits into the month of women. So it coincides. But welcome to the Leonhard Images, and thank you. A sincere thank you for honoring this appointment with the Senate Committee. It's not to be funny, but you are the political heads of those departments. Also the words of the Minister of Finance when he chairs the Budget Council, that we have to look at our finances in our provinces, working with the taxpayers' money, and we want good governance and sound financial management and value for money, and have a hands-on approach. We don't want to land up in a position again to have an intervention in the province of the magnitude that the intervention was done in Limpopo. Because when this was announced in 2011, on the 5th of December, about the intervention of Limpopo, the question was asked, now what did Parliament do? Didn't you see this incoming? So we've got our role to play in terms of our oversight. But very important that national, provincial and local spheres of government work together to get better service delivery and better performance and good governance. But apologies, I received one such apology from Honorable Mokisisi. He's not feeling well. Yeah, it is winter, so we will experience some problems with health. That's the only apology. Honorable Chani is in the building, he's on his way to the chairperson of the Select Committee for a group license. We also have the National Treasury here, Mr. Shishi, that will also do a briefing to us. When the two MECs address us, they can introduce the team that is part of their delegation. Taker, are you ready? Just make sure, all the members, that you have the documentation in front of you. Secondly, sign the attendance register. That's for the purpose of the minute. Mr. Shishi, you can lead us through your presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable members of the committee, Honourable MECs and colleagues from the provinces of Free State and KZN. I must say from the outset, obviously, as these are quarterly engagements in respect of provincial finances, as time goes by, information does get updated. Obviously, for the previous quarter's hearings, Free State and KZN were not part of that round of hearings. What that means is that for information purposes, there's certain things that have been updated since then. So I think honourable members will forgive me if it looks as though the structure of the information is a little bit different, but that's simply because we are in a bit of a different phase of the financial period. So I think that's just a slight thing to note with respect to the way in which the information is presented here today. But in essence, it is in line with the requirements and the requests of the committee as we have sought to meet them in the past. Just to go straight then into the presentation, this is just a reminder of information that was made available for the Budget Council. This is what we call a summary of the pre-audited outcome of provincial expenditure at the end of last year. Later on, I'll also, for the purpose of information, indicate the first quarter information that we published in terms of Section 32 on the National Treasury's website 3 weeks ago, or not 2 weeks ago, actually. So, obviously, the annual financial statements of provinces are being audited, or the audits are being finalized by the Auditor General and will be published as part of the annual report. But in terms of the pre-audited outcomes, you can see there that in aggregate, we are broadly moving in the direction which we set ourselves in terms of the broad focused areas of provincial government, the provincial sphere of government. is a major focus area is education and health. You can see there that that's where provinces are spending the vast majority of their money, and then the remainder is split across the other sectors, particularly public works, roads and transport, depending on the configuration of the specific department, as well as human settlements, agriculture, etc. Education last year in all provinces in aggregate was just under 99%, 98.9%, health at 99.2%, and social development at 98.5%. The other sectors within provinces, the non-social sectors, are where we saw slightly lower levels of expenditure percentage terms against the budget that were appropriated, as you can see there on aggregate. To give it to zero in then on each province, as I've stated in the past, there is obviously a mixed bag. Provinces are not the same, so you get different things. So in provinces such as Limpopo, Northern Cape, Northwest, we had in percentage terms more significant under expenditure. The provinces that are here today are Free State underspent by 1% or 253.7 million rand, KwaZulu-Natal underspent by 539, but in percentage terms, KwaZulu-Natal were probably the best spending province in the country and came closest to all provinces to breaking even in terms of its appropriation in percentage terms there. On aggregate, we've seen a growth in provincial spending of 7.3% as illustrated on the bottom right-hand side of that slide. Again, just in aggregate, you can see there what we've termed over the years the March spike at the end of the year across the provinces, and of course the opposite at the beginning of the year, where it takes provinces a while to get going in the first few months, in the first quarter of the financial year. You can see there that things take a while and then they start rising, and then of course June, January, there is a quarter four, and that's mostly because obviously that's the holiday period, various things start happening there, particularly in the infrastructure side because of those holidays, etc., and then start picking up again. But I think here what this basically illustrates is the fact that we're still grappling with the issue of the March spike, where a lot of expenditure tends to take place in that last month of the financial year. This slide we've added as an outcome of the financial statement information that we didn't have at the time when we presented information during May. And what this is accrual. Accrual basically means that notwithstanding the payments that provinces have made during the financial year as at the end of March, there are still invoices that they have been received from service providers that actually haven't been paid. And those have come out in subsequent financial statements. It's sort of a mixed bag on the right-hand side there. If you look at the first top block, it's aggregate for the whole province. The second block is education, and the third block is health. But if you look at the top block, at the end of the previous year, our accruals were in provinces were 13.36 billion. We've reduced accruals in provinces to 10.4 billion, so we're moving in the right direction. But there are a couple of provinces where we still have a concern in respect of accruals, and others where the accruals have slightly increased instead of decreasing. Gauteng is a major contributor to accruals in the system. But you can see there that the Western Cape has a slight increase in accruals in percentage terms. It's not bad, 1.5% of the budget. And you can see as well, Free State has had an increase in accruals, although there the percentage, in other words, the percentage of the accrual, i.e. unpaid invoices as a percentage of budget, is considerably higher at 6%. So that just is just an attempt to illustrate to you what is the state of the unpaid invoices as reported in the financial statement submitted by CFOs and HODs to the Auditor General in May. And of course, given the fact that a lot of spending in provinces and a lot of the activity in provinces is in health and education, you can see that those two sectors are the major contributors to that. Particularly health in Gauteng has been a major contributor. So that's just for your information there in respect of the accruals in provinces. Just some statements from our side. This information we've already made available for the purposes of the Budget Council. It wasn't presented, but it was made available. But I just thought we would just highlight the things there. There are positives that we could call highlights, and they concern, and I'll start with the highlights. And the first positive thing that we're seeing in provinces as an outcome of the last financial period is on COE, that compensation of employees, personnel expenditure, we're seeing growth rates that have been moderated and are looking a lot better than we've seen in quite a long time. Provinces have been overspending on personnel every year since 2006-07, except this past year. This past year, provinces came within budget for the first time since 2006-07, and that's good news. And part of that is because of very strong evidence of stronger control over personnel by a majority of provinces. And I've noted there that we're seeing personnel numbers in Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Northern Cape and Western Cape being more tightly controlled in this past financial period than we've seen in quite a long time. And that has been a major contributor. Particularly the first four, the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, KZN and Limpopo, which are the biggest employers amongst the nine provinces. Their contribution is very significant in making sure that we start coming within budget. And so that is a major highlight given that provinces spend a big majority of their budget on compensation. We've also seen in the last financial year very specific savings on goods and services items through better supply chain and contract management. There's still a long way to go, honourable members, but it's something that we wanted to highlight there, and there's some lessons learned that we're trying to spread across the nine provinces. We've seen big savings in LCSM and Limpopo. We're able to deliver the same number of textbooks, but deliver them at a considerably lower cost in that province. Working together with USAID in Gauteng, we saw a significant saving in the medicine supply process in that particular province. So this is just a couple of examples of things that have happened that are positive. And then finally, although there's still quite a way to go in capital spending with respect to infrastructure, there is no question that we're seeing improvement in capital spending by provinces. And on aggregate, we saw an improvement. Again, on aggregate, you know, there's obviously outliers here and there, but on aggregate, there's been an improvement from 88% in 11-12 to 94% in 12-13. So those are the highlights. However, in terms of the lowlights, there's still more work that's required in terms of productivity gains from historical personnel injections. In other words, there's been a big increase in personnel estimates in provinces over the last 5 years, since 2009. A lot of it is because of things like OSD and RCS, etc. But one of the things that we've been wanting to do is to establish, having added money for OSD, what have been the productivity gains as a result of adding this money on personnel. So, you know, going beyond just looking at the superficial numbers, we need to understand, is there a way of measuring productivity gains in education and health as a result of OSD additions? There's work going on at the moment by EPSA and the sector departments on this to try to establish a methodology for this, and then we can take it forward. There is quite a bit that still needs to be done around the personnel system. The personnel system is a reasonably good system if it's properly managed. However, there are some gaps that appeared in respect of data standards, as well as interpretation of the issues required to differentiate between frontline and back office or support staff. Just to give an example of what I mean by this, if you take health, for instance, you find that there are a number of provinces where their interpretation of what admin staff is different from a majority of provinces. So in Limpopo, for instance, during the administration intervention, we find that in Limpopo they were classifying literally hundreds of people as frontline staff in hospitals when they were in fact admin staff. So these are the kinds of interpretation issues that we're working together with EPSA to clarify on the personnel system. There are still concerns around budgeting for goods and services. If you look at medicines and medical supplies, in the nine provinces last year we spent 12.7 billion rand on medicines and medical supplies. So quite a lot of money. And only Northwest and Western Cape were able to stay within budget for both these items. Everybody else couldn't stay within budget overspent. So budgeting for goods and services in medicine and medical supplies, which is a major, major goods and services item in provinces, is still a problem that we need to resolve. As well as spending on contractors. Contractors who provide infrastructure, services and delivery. There were basically only two provinces where the spending, we could say, was relatively reasonable. Not perfect by any means, but relatively reasonable. That was KZN and Mpumalanga. Four provinces underspent on contractors, and that was Eastern Cape Gauteng. Four provinces underspent, and Eastern Cape Gauteng and Western Cape overspent on contractors. So that's just an example of two items where goods and services is not being properly budgeted for. There's still quite a bit of work to be done on the management of capital budgets and performance. We supplied a presentation for Budget Council, information that's not here because it's quite soft, it's not really so much of public consumption as yet, illustrating issues around management of contracts and professional fees in infrastructure that still needs to be sorted out, and that's something that we are working with provinces on, where consultants are being paid disparate amounts of fees across the different provinces to run infrastructure projects. I've noted in the past the issue of fiscal projections by provinces, where we're addressing that through TCF, as I mentioned in my conclusion. And then, of course, conditional grants. Conditional grants are unquestionably the largest contributor to underspending in provinces. Out of the 7-odd billion rand under expenditure last year, 3.8 billion rand was in conditional grants. So that is the major area of underspending that we still are seeing. And also, the forward estimates are being called into question because out of the 3.8 billion rand underspent by provinces, there was a request for only 1.2 billion rand rollover, which implies that the rest of the money was actually not committed to anything. Therefore, it's calling into question how our forward estimates are looking, and we need to look at that. And we are looking at that actually going forward. And then finally, other issues. I've already spoken to the issue of the accruals. Accumulated unauthorized expenditure has declined and continues to decline. A major contributor to this is Gauteng Health. They've just approved a clearing of unauthorized expenditure, which will bring that number even lower. Bank balances in provinces continue to rise, and a lot of that is because conditional grants are not being spent fast enough. They're sitting in bank accounts and earning interest and contributing to higher bank balances, and that is a major concern that we're still working on. Having said that, however, the accruals need to be thought of as a kind of negative to that statement, to say that the accruals mean that those invoices have to be paid and therefore they reduce the number. That's part of that we have to look at. The issue of weakness and monthly projections is, as I said, something we're looking at. And finally, commitment control. The procurement system of government needs to improve, and the Chief Procurement Office is busy addressing. So finally then, to look at the specific numbers, easier for you to look in the handout that you've been given, I think, other than that slide there at the front. These are Free State numbers at the end of last year. And out of the 253.7 million, you can see that basically what happened in the Free State is they overspent on personnel by 235.9 million rand, but underspent on capital by 256 million rand. So the budgeting here and the expenditure did not work out properly because we looked at the numbers and we found that there was about somewhere between 900 and 960 additional staff hired, as we said, during the last financial year, and that contributed to overspend on personnel because it means they didn't have enough money to pay the salaries in terms of the existing budget, and therefore they overspent on their budget. On the other hand, on infrastructure, the infrastructure spending in health in particular did not work out the way it should have been, so that resulted in underspending on infrastructure there. That bottom part is just to show you for your information how the spending is divided in terms of the percentage share. So you can read that up in your time. The conditional grants in the Free State, similarly, you can see that where we've had a problem. If you look at health, you can see that there was poor spending in the health infrastructure grant, as well as in the NHI grant, of course, was poor spending there as well, but there was also poor spending in the revised grant. So again, just emphasizing the point that I made earlier, the problem we have there is infrastructure spending in the health department in the Free State has the problem, as well as in nursing colleges. There's underspending in other areas, although those grants are a little bit smaller than that. So I think the major area, which is one we can highlight, is that the conditional grant in health has been a bit of a problem, particularly as infrastructure. This is just for information on the first quarter, section 32 information that was there, provided by the province as required by section 32 of the PSMA. The difference here is that the area where it says over and under is not an outcome, it's a projection by province. We think that these projections are very unreliable. But this is the information that the CFOs are sending to say that they were to overspend by this large amount, 1.4 billion. And as I said, we raise this issue with the province to say that these projections are unreliable. There's nothing in the numbers that says that this is where they're going to end up. We've raised this issue both at TCF and the Budget Council to say that this must be fixed. And I have said myself in this committee in the past that we are working with CFOs to get them to do a better job on projections because CFOs, departments in my view, are not doing a good enough job in terms of projecting where they're going to be financially. So that's something that needs to be fixed. The next slide is just talking to the conditional grants for the first quarter. I'm sure Charlie's committee will obviously interrogate those numbers. And there he is. For your information as well. Early days, the first quarter, as you saw in an earlier slide, many things can happen in the last three quarters, but that's just for your information, the first quarter for Free State in terms of conditional grants. Turning now to KZN numbers for the end of last year, these again are pre-audited numbers. Still waiting for the Auditor General's opinion on these things. I mean, I must say that KZN obviously has this underexpenditure number of 139, as I said at the beginning, this must be viewed against the overall size of their budget, which is much larger than any other province in the country, and in percentage terms, therefore, the outcomes are better in percentage terms, again, than what we've seen in some of the other provinces in the country. And they're better than last year, where we saw a huge amount of overexpenditure, particularly in education, and we're not seeing that this year. So, the numbers are not perfect by any means, but the point that I'm making is that the trajectory in terms of the numbers is sort of moving in the right direction compared to where we were last year, where we had a massive amount of over-expenditure by something like 1.2 billion rand in education alone. So that's a little bit better on that side. But still, we can see over-expenditure in compensation of employees, personnel in province, and a large amount of under-expenditure in turning to the conditional grant, overall it's 98.1%. The places where the provinces have not had the best success obviously has been in the big departments of education and health. But also, I think we were quite concerned to see that in agriculture, land care did not spend its full allocation. We have had discussions with both the National Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and the province on the under-expenditure. We wanted to find ways of seeing that improved in the current financial year. For the first quarter, KZN's numbers are there. I think the statement is similar. There may be pressures in the department, but I think that these projections from our side, we take them with a grain of salt, because these are given where the province has gone in terms of improving its expenditure outcomes in the last couple of years. This projection of 1.2 billion rand over expenditure at the end of March 2014, in our opinion, is both unreliable and also, I think the CFOs need to commit themselves to stay within budget. That's what the law says you must do. And the idea that you need to start putting out that you're going to break the law is a bit problematic. But that's the projection that we have received in terms of Section 32 of the PSMA. And then the conditional grants are there. You can see the first quarter outcome for the conditional grant in KZN. Looking at the issue of the bank balances, we keep every quarter we want to update the committee on where the bank balances are going. The bank balances at the end of April were at 19.2, at the end of June they were 25.3. So we're still seeing the increase in bank balances, with the exception of the free state of the bank balances that have gone down. I think the overall trends here are, they're interesting because there's a few provinces which are the major contributors. We are working on a process. We had the Minister of Finance to the Free State recently. Before he visited the Free State, we had a discussion with him about an approach to dealing with cash management in provinces. And we are looking at working on some sort of a guideline in this respect. And there's a lot of issues we need to look at, but this is just for your information as the committee. Now, turning to non-financial information, the major question is that what does the money buy in terms of the non-financial performance of provinces? There's a large number of key performance indicators that various sectors have selected. These indicators are selected and endorsed by the relevant national department, education, health, and so on and so forth. And then there are targets that are set. Some of the targets are quarterly in nature. Some of the targets are annual in nature. These things are an annual performance plan of department. And then either on a quarterly basis or on an annual basis, departments report against how they're actually performing in respect of these indicators. This is just a sample of some of the indicators that, as I said, are a massive number of them across departments. So we've submitted a sample just for the information of the committee, just to highlight our view is that a big part of incentivizing people to get performance reporting right and to pay better attention to the numbers and to the reports is making them available publicly. So as the National Treasury, we have over the last couple of years been publishing this information on our website. With effect from this current financial year, we have agreed with all the 9 provincial treasuries that they will publish information with respect to their provinces on their website so that the public can see what is the non-financial performance of departments in respect of the key performance indicators that they've set themselves in the APPs tabled in each of the provincial legislatures. Just as an example, an indicator in education, and the name of the indicator is the number of schools visited at least once a quarter by a circuit manager. This is the proxy for school inspections and things like that. You can see the target in the first column that was set in terms of the ADP tables in the provincial legislature, and then in each of the quarters, the planned output is there, and then the actual output that's validated is the, sort of the second column after each of the portions, and then at the end there, you've got actual output, and then you've got the actual output per the annual report. In other words, the numbers that they are putting in the annual report that's going to come out next month, together with the auditor general's outcome. That's just for the information of the committee. By the way, for your interest, some people may ask, well, what happened to Gauteng? We have had a problem in the past with Gauteng not reporting on circuit managers visiting schools. We solved that problem with effect from this year. We are starting to see those reports come through for the first quarter information that's being published during the course of this month. You see that number there. So we've had a problem in the past there. So we've won that fight with them. We will be able to get that. I think another thing that this type of information illustrates, as I've said in the past, is that whether it's M&E people or the HODs people or whoever it is who puts this information together, it's organized differently in different departments. We are still fighting the fight of some departments using the copy and paste situation. So for instance, in the Free State, you see exactly the same number every single time. Maybe that's perfectly possible. It could very well be the case, and if it is, then that's fine. But it is much suspicious when you see exactly the same number every single time. But that's an issue that we've raised that they can address. Just moving on into some other examples, you can see how is probably the best data that we have across 9 provinces in terms of reporting non-financial information. The data is probably most comprehensive across all the sectors. That's just for your information. And we've just selected for your information the HIV and AIDS, TB and STI control, that's the testing rate, as well as the immunization coverage for children under 1 year, one year old in the provinces. The next one is agriculture. We're talking about 2 programs. The one is sustainable resource management in terms of certificate issued for infrastructure constructed, as well as the number of abattoirs inspected in each of the provinces in respect of animal health, which is quite an important issue in agriculture. So that's just for your information. People can read it there on time. Just to conclude then, I think it's important, having raised the fact that we have a number of challenges and we're seeing certain things in our numbers, it's important for honourable members to know the fact that that doesn't mean that these are the problems that are hanging. These problems are being resolved, and there are processes in place to try and resolve these problems. And that's very, very important to note those strategies, and we're sticking to our guns in respect of those strategies, because we're confident that they're going to work. National Treasury has commenced the rollout of its latest round of courses that we provide to provincial officials. We as the National Treasury run 2 courses where officials can be accredited, a budget formulation course and a budget analysis course, and this is designed to capacitate provincial officials with the technical skills required in these areas of budgeting and analyzing budget expenditure. Secondly, the infrastructure delivery management system is being rolled out in all the provinces. All of the 9 provincial executive committees have endorsed the IDMS, which is part of IDIP3 project, for their province. So those endorsements have been received across all the 9 provinces in the country. And the main, what we would call the main tool for delivering IDIP, which is called IDMS, see there, is being rolled out across the 9 provinces to prepare for the 2014 bidding process for infrastructure funds. This bidding process we announced as part of the Minister's budget speech in February this year, and briefed members of this and the other committees, the other 3 committees, 2 in the National Assembly and the other one in the National Council of Provinces, on that particular process, which is outlined in the next W1 of the Division of Revenue Bill. Steps are being taken through the TCA to address poor spending projections, which I spoke about earlier, the poor monthly projections, as well as cash flow projections by department and poor reporting by those departments. And these matters have also been raised with members of the Budget Council. Again, this is about capacitating, but also holding CFOs accountable for the technical report and projection work that they need to do. So that process is also underway. We are also currently rolling out the Financial Management Improvement Program, the FMIP program, that I spoke about, I think it was during April or May, at the Select Committee hearing on provincial numbers last time around, in partnership with the European Union, where they have very kindly assisted us with international donor money to improve financial management practices in provinces. And on that point, I have to make one slide comment a little bit for honourable members off slide. It's important for us to have perspective on this issue that financial management in South Africa is not terrible. What we're doing is we're not trying to somehow lift financial management off the doldrums or the bottom of the pile. Our financial management system in South Africa is in terms of the system, relatively good. What we don't get right is the implementation. And what we don't get right is the application of those systems. I was meeting with a group of people yesterday who have conducted assessments internationally of public financial management, and they say that we are among the top three countries that, for which they have assessments of our systems. So our systems are very, very strong. It's not about fixing that area of the system. It's about fixing the implementation, fixing the capacity of individuals to implement the things that we have in place. So it's a very important perspective to have, because otherwise if you start thinking that you need to fix this thing, when in fact the problem is on the, more on the capacity and more on the individual skills and institution side, then you misdiagnose the problem. So I just thought I'd make that point there. And that is the focus area of our ESMET program. How do we fix the capacity of the people that have to implement those particular systems that we already have in place? We are also conducting something called the Public Expenditure and Financial Accountability Assessment in four provinces across the country, including these two that are here today. This is a process that's being spearheaded by the OECD and the World Bank across the world. The EU, once again, has very kindly given us donor money to provide a systematic assessment of provincial public financial management over the next number of months. This was only confirmed yesterday, so that was a bit of good news on that one. And that helps us get a more systematic assessment in place for where are the areas that need to be fixed. Just briefly, what they have 31 indicators. And each of the indicators, they score a problem in terms of its public financial management, whether it's cash management, budget management, et cetera, on these things. And that allows you to identify specific areas of reform rather than a shutdown approach where you try and fix everything. It's not necessarily everything that needs to be fixed. And then finally, we are currently conducting an expenditure review project together with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency to assess the success or failure of government programs and to propose policy reforms that will improve delivery in the future. And this is a two-year process that hopefully will conclude sometime in 2014-15. That's my story, Honourable Chair. I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shishi, Honourable Members. There you've got the picture regarding these provinces and a bit more information. We recognize the presence of Mbuchani, Wagner Mbuchani and Honourable Bloom, but then also the FFC, Anya and Henry. The acting chairperson of the FFC submitted an apology. He's still doing a paper in Nairobi, in Kenya. All members, are there current questions to the test of the year? You've got the figures. We now going to listen to the policies. Honourable Mashila, I see you are anxious.
Well, I'm not sure whether it's really clarity, clarity-seeking questions, but one would have asked whether the National Treasury has tried to make some sense when it comes to the bank balances of provinces in relation to their accruals. Because we see, you're showing us bank balances that the provinces are not in the red, many of them, but again is that they have got huge accruals and trying to make some sense what is happening, and is it just simply a refusal to settle those interests, or is there anything that involves that kind of a situation that you owe these guys, you have money these guys? And what's happening, right? So if one could just understand what has happened there. And Chair, I think on the non or the performance side, one would have loved to understand in those provinces where there is a higher expenditure on COE, but under expenditure on CAPEX and goods and services in relation to the protest marches that are heavy. Is there any relation in the two? Probably maybe in your next engagement with us, that kind of an assessment will actually assist us. And one was thinking that Treasurer was going to talk a little bit more, Chair, on this March spike. I think we have raised all sorts of reservations in the past, and now you have not given us information. Of course, you are just simply saying that you must go back home and do our own analysis, what is happening. But if you could have just talked to it a little bit, I think it would have assisted. Because we really don't know, some of us, what is there that is happening. And you have got the expenditure that just simply jumped just before the close of the financial year. And then after that, the first quarter, then almost nothing is happening. Are we seeing invoices of the next coming financial year being prepaid in the closing financial year? Or are we seeing fiscal dumping to register the expenditure before the financial year closes up? What is happening? I think we almost need some sort of a serious paper. You know, it's on these things, so that somebody must analyze it exactly, because we may be misled, we may be misrepresented, or the facts may be misrepresented, and we definitely need some time to get to the bottom of the truth. Because, I mean, you can't have a province chair that register spending 100% or 98%, but then you've got protests going on every day there of non-session delivery. What is happening? So maybe having expenditure happening, but the expenditure is not significant to service delivery to people. And I think this is probably if we could sometimes get that kind of an analysis to assist us. Thank you, Chair.
Anyone else? Thank you. Honourable members, when the Minister of Finance tables the annual budget, there is an estimate of expenditure, and it goes to the other years as well. Also, the division of revenue gives the province and department an idea what is your estimate, what are you going to receive. So in terms of those figures, planning can be done. Now why do we have to get started in the first 2 months of the new financial year? And that's where you say you implemented two new courses on page 22 of your presentation. On budget formulation and budget analysis, the last round of two courses refer to the whole issue of implementation. Now, do you test these people attending the course before he leaves back to the province? Did the attendee understand what he was taught to them and go back and implement? If you don't do that, there's a gap. Then you won't know until you get to a province in terms of your oversight that your department plays in national treasury. So that's where we have to do something different. And hammering all this when we deal with municipalities as well. We deal with this when we sit in the preparations committee chaired by Ombudsman, looking at the spending on conditional grants. People are doing workshops, etc. We deal with this with Salgam. We had the government week last week. So I just want to make this remark. You can quickly respond to all the serious questions and then we'll take the free speech.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue of, with respect to Honourable Mashila's point on cash balances, and we have mentioned it in a past, he raised this issue, and I agree, there is still quite a bit of work to be done. As I said, we're looking at how these guidelines can be put together, but in terms of making sense of the balances themselves at the end of the year, versus the accruals, and this is the point that I referred to in slide 8 of this presentation, where when you factor in the accruals and factor in conditional grant surrenders, yes, you can see that the real cash balance, real in the sense of when you offset the commitments arising from the invoice that must be paid, is considerably lower than the cash balance itself at the end of the year. So we made that point there in slide number 8. I think part of what we need to do is we need to determine, and this was the conversation with the minister, we need to determine what is it that we want provinces to be prepared for? To what extent do we want provinces to have balances available? Do we want them to have enough money for a month, 2 months worth of payments? What is the kind of minimum balance that you require in order to be, as a running balance, to run yourself as a province? And partly, of course, avoid the Limpopo situation as well. We're not yet seeing a problem at the Limpopo area in terms of completely running out of cash, but it is something that we've agreed with the minister we're going to work on, and then obviously with his endorsement we'll put something out for comments, etc., etc. So that is a process that we're working on. But we did try to make sense of the cash balance versus accrual, and that's where we came up with that close to 5 billion rand number that we have there in slide number 8. But there's more work that we're going to be doing on that one. On the issue of overspending on compensation of employees versus underspending on goods and services, it's quite a complex issue. One can sort of discuss it all day, and I've been in workshops where it's been discussed all day, but let me just summarize it by saying it like this. As I said earlier, I think provinces are still struggling to budget accurately for goods and services. Our view is that there's still more that needs to be done to get budgeting right for goods and services. But at the same time, more also needs to be done to control expenditure in the end for goods and services. But that's what I just want in that respect. You either budget what you need to spend, but once you've done that on the other side, you must control the spending itself to make sure that you manage what needs to happen. Certainly, as far as service delivery is concerned, there's no question that when you have a situation where there's billions of rands in services for which payment is not made, for instance, which reflects in the accruals, that seems to suggest that service delivery is not being tightly managed, because it means that somebody is expected to provide a service, but then they don't get paid in time. That has a ripple effect in the following period, and the service becomes slower and slower, and so on and so forth. That's what we saw in Gauteng, the famous Gauteng health situation where, you had various problems with hospitals not getting food in time, various problems with medicines, etc. The service providers were just set up because they hadn't been paid for months and months. So there are those indications. There's, to some extent, anecdotal, and the provinces can speak more specifically to their own situations, because the departments are also not all the same. There tend to be differences in some of these things as to why these things happen. On compensation of employees, my view is, of course we've got a problem on compensation of employees, but the trajectory in terms of compensation of employees is the correct one. in the sense that the trends are moving in the right direction. We're seeing better spending outcomes and compensation of employees than we've seen in recent years. As I said, this is the first financial year we've come within budget for compensation since 2006-07, where people were just overspending on personnel all over the time. We're not seeing that anymore, and we believe that that will continue in the current period. So hopefully, we're starting to get a better handle of it, and the reason why we're getting a handle of it, from our perspective, is there's a better control amongst a number of provinces, especially bigger ones, on the actual staffing, recruitment, and management of the numbers of people. So it's by no means perfect. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, but the trends in general are in the right direction. In that respect. On the March 5th, there is a March 5th report. It is quite a thick report, and that's quite difficult to summarize because there's many reasons for the March 5th. But amongst the big departments like education, what we see in education, for instance, is there's a big March 5th in conditional grants. I'll give you an example. There's a grant in education called HIV and AIDS Life Skills. In the penultimate month of the financial year, which is February, the spending on that grant was only about 60%, which is 30 days ago. All of a sudden, in the last month, it went up 85%. So, you know, we're seeing that, and then when we asked, what are we spending money on exactly, on the same? The list of things that we got, Honorable Chair, were things like training courses, catering, etc., which seems to suggest that people were trying to spend money quickly, move the money, because the weeks are coming when the term will end and they need to move the money. So there are examples of nefarious intentions, but also we are seeing transfers to entities outside of government being accelerated in the last, not outside of government, but outside of departments. Being accelerated. And so that's something that we've raised, particularly in our rollover committee, senior management rollover committee, that needs to be addressed. And then finally, Honourable De Beer, I agree with you on the planning as well as on the issue of the courses. I think the quick answer to your question is yes, they do get tested and they have to submit an assignment. What we have found is that the problem that we have in terms of the skills and the capacity of people is around, and I mentioned this, I think, in the Mr. Kumalo was here from the SFC in the briefing I gave in May. We are seeing poor institutional memory, partly as a result of quite a high staff turnover in CFO offices. Together with the Office of the Accountant General, we did a survey over the last number of years. The average CFO in government has a lifespan of something like 2 years. Then they leave and move on. Or they get pushed out in the case of some provincial department, municipality, or whatever. Now, if you have a situation where you've got these people who are turning over so quickly, and also the staff within those offices are turning over very quickly, particularly supply chain management staff, then clearly you're going to have poor institutional memory. And you're going to be retrained. Every time you train people, you're seeing new faces all the time. And as a result of that, you're not embedding some of those practices as well as you would like. So this is the challenge, I think, that we face. But absolutely, those people have to be tested, and they do get tested and get certified. But unfortunately, they tend to move on quite quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shishi. We've been looking at the end of the two provinces who made their inputs as well. The three states, you're welcome to MEC Robin. Good to see you are well again. A broken leg. Difficult, but welcome. With your team, you can introduce your team, make your input, and then go to your presentation. Now, there's 76 slides. There's such 8 pages, 3 slides on the page. So, you've got 30 minutes to cover your slides. Give us the picture of your province in terms of your fiscal position, and then your spending with it in terms of your department. And what are your challenges? Where do you need our assistance? Where do you need treasury assistance? We are here to support each other, but we are also here to do the accountability side, to account for money that has been allocated. So, on the MEC, over to you, thank you. You've got got time until 10 past 7.
Thank you, Timothy. The last I was here, walking back to the hotel, I broke my leg, so it's a better day today. With me, next to me, is the acting CEO of our provincial treasury, Mr. McCloudsey. Our CEO retired on the 31st of July. So the post has been advertised, but in the process, it's closed already. So we're in the process of shortlisting and concluding the recruitment process. So by September, there should be a CEO appointed. And then behind me is our provincial accountant general, Mrs. Fury, and our senior executive manager in charge of sustainable resource management, Mr. Moses. And then also with us is the CEO of Treasury. Provincial Treasury. And Mr. Mabizu is acting ACM for Aston Liability Management. And then I also have my office's parliamentary officer with me. But thank you very much for the opportunity. And the first few slides was more setting out the background to certain key outcomes, specifically relating to health, education, the labour market conditions and unemployment in the Free State, as well as the current process that we have initiated we've been busy with it for the past 2 years on the revised Free State Growth and Development Strategy. But I think in view of time, we can keep all of that and go straight towards where we start with the provincial fiscal envelope for the 2013 MTF. We can go back to the other issues if there's time and if members would want to do that. The provincial revenue envelope, I think the National Treasury presentation has also covered that. For the 2012-13 financial year, the adjusted budget amounted in total to 25.8 billion, and it indicated the breakdown of between equitable share, infrastructure enhancement allocation, conditional grant, social transfers that we received from National Treasury, provincial own revenue, and provincial reserves and rollovers. And then also, importantly, it indicates the impact of the revised equitable share formula on Free State under the MTF period going forward. In the 2012-13 preliminary budget outcomes, the allocated adjusted budget amounted to 25.9 billion, of which the equitable share was 18.7 or 72.6%, conditional grants amounted to 5.9 billion, 23%, provincial own receipt 820 million or 3.2%, cash reserves 321.7 million, 1.2%, and the deficit budget was 5.5 million or 0.02%. Economic classifications are set out, the balance payments were 19.5 billion, of which compensation for employees was 15.1. Capital asset payments 2.7 billion and transfer payments 3.6 billion. And then the social versus other departments, the SHE department, social development, health, education, 19.125 billion and all other departments contributed 6.7 billion. Now, the 2012-13 preliminary expenditure by departments, I think it just breaks it down in further detail from what National Treasury has already presented. The first part is the three social services departments, education, which you would note the over expenditure of 0.1%, then health and social development. The actual expenditure was in education was 100.1%, health was 98.2%, and social development 99.5%. Whereas the non-social services spending, Department of Premier was 99.1%, legislation 98.4%, economic development 97.4%, treasury 99%, booked 96.5%, public works 98%, police road transport 98.4%, agriculture 100%, sport arts culture 98.3%, human settlement 98.1% and rural development 82.3%. I think we should just note there that agriculture and rural development budgets were separated, and I think they were still unproductive journals at the end of the financial year, so that picture will change between agriculture and rural development. The education overspending mostly resulted as a result of compensation of employees. It was a monthly expenditure by the department over the last 3 years, and the pattern that emerges there is that most departments have either maintained or increased their spending against their budget allocations. In the 2012-13 expenditure by economic classification, that is in, that's like the next slide, yeah. The current payment compensation of employees was over expenditure goods and services, another expenditure, interest and rent on land, there was under expenditure. Then we have the transfers and subsidies, under expenditure. Payments capital assets for the under expenditure. And I don't know if you need me to go into all those details. I'm sure Ms. can follow quickly. Then the salary, the expenditure by economic classification over the last 3 years would indicate a minimum decline on current payments and a minimum decline on transfers and subsidies and a slight increase towards payment for capital assets. 2012-13, the next slide, expenditure on compensation of employees. Compensation of employees. Education, health and social development are three over expenditures. Departments have incurred over expenditure. On education, it was as a result mostly of improvement of conditions of service and interventions to improve education results. On health, mostly due to filling of critical posts, improvement conditions of the service, and intake of Cuban doctors. And social development, it does sound strange to me, but the danger around for social workers was underprovided for. So that's the three main reasons for the expenditure of the three departments on compensation. In the 2012-13 expenditure on goods and service, overspending by health, as well as police roads and transport. The rest were all more or less within an acceptable rate. The 2012-13 expenditure on capital, education overspend, as well as rural development. Expenditure on conditional grants. I think there we go into the details of the four conditional grants for agriculture, the educational conditional grants, the underspending on Dina Levy School grant, ABDNA, as well as Social Tech EPWP. Those are all matters of concern. The performance of the health department with respect to conditional grants are really disappointing in many instances. And there is a serious concern about the capacity and planning of the department. Sport, arts and culture and recreation maintain very good spending trends on their conditional grants. Public works, I think the Free State is one of the better performing provinces when it comes to devolution of property rights funds. Although the EPWP grant performance can really improve substantially. Police road transport, the details are set out there, as well as economic development, social development, and human settlement. We also reflect the expenditure on conditional grants over the last 3 years, over the next two slides. In the 2012-13 expenditure on infrastructure, so to provide the details there of the different departments, the sources of funding, the expenditure and the projected overall under expenditure. So I think we should also just indicate there that the Free State was lagging behind in approving the IDMS by the Executive Council, but that has now been completed. I think we have been catching up significantly on getting the IDMS properly in place. That is the infrastructure expenditure, and we also give that breakdown over the last 3 years on of our expenditure on infrastructure in the next slide. we can go to 2012, so you can own the revenue by department. Four departments, Premier, Economic Development, Treasury, as well as Human Settlement, are under collection against what was projected. And that is probably not only a result of the broader economic conditions, but also speaks to the capacity of departments to focus on revenue collection. We give the projection or the trend over the last 4 years of own revenue performance, of which there was a decline in the 2012-13 financial year. Again, that might not just be general economic conditions, but probably a more accurate reflection between projection and actual collection. Then we introduced quite a number of revenue enhancement initiatives, and we adopted the provincial revenue enhancement strategy. Part of that deals with outstanding debt, where provincial treasury leads a process towards looking at the debt position of the province. The Department of Economic Development received funding for specific revenue enhancement initiatives that include electronic booking system for resorts and reserves, the liquor database system, improving facilities at the resorts and reserves, as well as security at the resorts and reserves. For the Department of Health, patient billing and verification, collection of outstanding debt and cash managers are all activities under REA. Public Works, there's an extensive review of rental guidance, tenants, contracts and rental fees. That's an ongoing process. We're looking at advertising and branding of government buildings together with the appropriate local municipalities, where we have to deal with bylaws in order to enable it. We're looking at parking space and immigration system and reserve of restaurants, quite a number of restaurants that was operating within the provincial government building environment have closed down. And as a result, throughout a number of years, not just during this term, it comes from previous term as well. And this has been a substantial loss of revenue for provincial government. Police and transport, there's specific attention given to wide bridges to get them properly operational and the grading functions of registration authorities. Agriculture, they received REA funds for the production of dairy facilities and other agricultural products. In cash management support and interlinked financial systems and supply chain management, I think the National Treasury presentation highlighted that, and it has also been set out in the presentation, there are specific concerns around the cash position of the province. So what is in place is budget blocking if there are no funds against the item to place orders and transaction does not go through. Some repayments outside locals are limited to specific payments which are not provided for on locals or special. The system controllers for banks is situated in Treasury. Treasury handles all the registration and banking details for suppliers and employees, as well as second verification is done by the bank before it gets captured on the system. Computer present checks are only printed by Treasury, and handwritten checks are only issued by Treasury, not by the department. Handwritten checks are limited to an amount of 500,000. Supply payments above $1 million and payable based payments above $5 million are verified and approved by Treasury before implementation by the bank, and disbursements for all departments are approved by Treasury. Then on cash management, the bank is controlled by means of cash needs ACB limits, which are implemented by the bank on instructions from Treasury, and those limits can only be amended by Treasury officials. Payments in excess of approved limits are rejected or approved by Treasury. Bank disbursements are deactivated for departments who exceed their monthly cash allocation. Approval for final cash processing of BCT payments is vetted in Treasury. We're doing monthly reconciliations between expected and provincial departments in respect of all financial transactions. Quarterly PMG forums with all departments are held to promote best cash management practices. Individual meetings are held with departments to follow up and continue improvement in cash management processes. And I receive bi-weekly reports on the provincial cash position. The next slide sets out the provincial cash position as of June 2013. noting that that's still excluded on authorized expenditure to be transferred and surrendered. Now, while the province claims the break even budget, the amount of unauthorized expenditure reported at the end of March has put pressure on provincial revenue funds. Investments are only made on surplus funds which are not immediately required to defray expenditure and therefore do not hinder the cash flow requirements of the province. The balance of unspent funds and revenue to be surrendered will be processed directly from the PMJ accounts after finalisation of the department's audit, that's 5th August, at which point the accounting records will close off for the 2012-13 financial year. And the amount of unspent funds to be surrendered to national departments will then be finalised during August 2013. Then the bank balances to ensure that PMJ accounts do not carry excessive cash. Treasury monitors the fluctuation of bank balances and any excess funds are transferred into the PRF. Any consult, equitable share or conditional grants to the PMG accounts is processed upon submission of disbursement reports by the departments. Only cash required to defray the disbursed expenditure is transferred to provincial departmental PMG accounts. And the revenue collected by the departments is transferred on a weekly basis to the provincial revenue fund. Then the SCM compliance and procurement. The central supplier database system is implemented across provincial departments. We have attended to the development of the SCM toolkit and ongoing capacity building. Looking at the reporting of tenders allocated through tender bulletin adverts, departments must report on expansion and variation of contracts and treasury. They submit procurement plans by 30 April each year and report monthly on deviations. Treasury is arranging transversal contracts for certain identified goods and services. Departments must report monthly on payments made in 30 days. And there is currently a development of strategies through procurement through cooperatives that are being driven. And Treasury is part of that process. Now, the 2012-13 audit opinions and related information have been given the synopsis that is set out there. The unqualified with no findings, the so-called clean audits has improved from 4 in the previous financial year to 6. The disclaimer opinions improved from 1 to 0, and finally have no disclaimer audit opinions in this respect. 70% of departments and entities achieved unqualified audit opinions for 2012-13, and that's a 5% improvement over the 65% in the previous financial year. The department entities that improved during 2012-13 is sport agriculture recreation that improved from unqualified with findings to unqualified with no findings. The same with fleet management and housing funds. Police roads and transport improved from qualified to unqualified with findings as with driving and liquor authority. And the police road development corporation improved from a disclaimer to qualification. The two regressions was the legislature that lost its clean audit and when it regressed to unqualified with findings based on performance information. And the Free State Tourism Authority regressed from unqualified with findings to qualified based on revenue. They lost the receipt books in subordinates. The unqualified with no findings remains the premier for the third year, provincial treasury for the fourth year, court arts and culture for the first year, seed management trading in the first year, native conservation fund, nature conservation fund, I think it's second or the third year, and the housing fund, is all the now I clean. Unqualified with findings, as I indicated, the legislature addressed, education, social development, OCTA stayed the same, research and transport improved to unqualified from qualified, agriculture, rural development, and the central medical trading account stayed the same, and gathering and liquor authority improved from qualification to unqualified. The department with qualified audit outcomes for 2012-13 is still economic development, tourism and environmental affairs, health, human settlements and public works. Free State Development Corporation improved from this climate to qualification and tourism authority regressed from unqualified with findings to qualified. Amongst those, with the qualified audit opinions, there is concern regarding the audit outcomes of health. The area of qualifications suggests that there is a lot of work left to be done in that. then there is just a nice graph with a summary of the audit opinions between 11-12 and 12-13. And then I think a good illustration of the progress made by departments related to the qualification findings. That's the next slide. Indicates that economic development in 2011-12 has 6 main areas of qualification that reduced to 2 in the 2012-13 financial year. Human settlement had 9 qualifications and that reduced to 2. Public work had 5 and reduced to 2. Police, roads and transport resolved all their qualification areas. Freedom Development Foundation reduced it from 10 to 4. And gambling and liquor addressed the 1 qualification area that they had. So I think even if they, where they are still qualified with opinions, in most of these departments, we are almost on the verge of moving all of them to the next level of unqualified. The only exception there would be us, that is still a concern. Then the next slide sets out the details of unauthorized related fruitless waste for expenditure commitments, accruals for supplies and accruals for government. Therefore remains a number of areas of concern. Unauthorized expenditure, the preliminary outcome increases from 64.9 million to 251 million. Irregular expenditure reduces, and even in that amount, 1.3 billion relates to the prior contract for roads, projects and housing. There is a slight increase in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's mainly interest on late payments, commitments. There is an increase, I think it was already, business accruals were already indicated by National Treasury. There are increases in both of those areas. The next slide says, sets out the details of unauthorized expenditure in health. Mainly overspending on main division. Main divisions of program 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7. Overspending on compensation, improvement condition of services higher than projected, the operating costs of emergency vehicles, acquisitions of medical equipment. Education would be overspending on the vote, 71.9 million overspending on main division, relating to compensation and goods and services related to textbooks. Police road transport would be compensation and government garage. Agriculture and rural development, goods and services overspend. Telephone and operating leases. And human settlement, expenditure not important to service for the vote. The overall budget-related challenges is the inadequacy of the provincial fiscal envelope due to the declining equitable share allocation. And the measures and remedies implemented. The 2012-13 budgetary prioritization freed up resources to deal with challenges mainly focusing on completion of strategic road projects and provincial burglaries. There will be increased focus on revenue collection. There we have adopted the revenue enhancement strategy, identification of new additional revenue sources, and monitoring of outstanding departmental debt. And the instruction note was issued in May 2013. We've introduced provincial pre-benchmark exercise to improve the credibility of the provincial budget. We provide monthly feedback to departments on India monitoring. We have implemented a turnaround strategy for the Department of Health. We have really done a significant amount of work with the Department of Health. We've undertaken a 10-year analysis of the department budget because, you know, we always value that it has money. And we've indicated to them that Freeside Health gets a full prioritization of all provincial departments. It is only in Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape that allocate more money to their provincial health departments than the Freeside. And we are very comfortable as Treasury that health has sufficient money, the choices that they make, and their management practices and what they do. So we have a joint team now with health that works with them. Not only on the restructuring of the budget, but also the financial management of the department. There has been a lot of capacity constraints and a lot of staff turnover. Both the former CFO and the financial manager of the department left in the previous financial year. So I think the point that National Treasury was also making about institutional memory is quite valid when it comes to our health department. Then we have the Free State has set up a provincial budget task team. The budget is not just funded by traders in isolation. We have a multidisciplinary team that does not only involve departments but also entities and municipalities. And after the last budget council in June, we have convened the provincial budget task team and indicated both the national economic picture as well as the Free State's current financial budget position. And the agreement was we are going to go back, restructure with all departments, and there will be no overcounts. In previous exercises, education helps get protected. That protection is not going to be there. They will fight for their money amongst all others. As the issues were raised by the crew, the principle is simply that if you come and tell us you are starting off the financial year with 100 rand less, you need to tell us when that 100 rand is going to come from, because it's not going to come from treasury. It's a roughly prioritization. So somewhere the sacrifice will have to be made, and either the departments will ask the question themselves or we will answer it for them. So it's not nice to be in treasury. But those are the realities of what we are dealing with. There is no additional money floating around. So that talks to the restructuring of the provincial budget and the provincial budget costing. In addition, there is a development of the SCM toolkit to be used by department entities and municipalities as a step-by-step guide in assisting with procurement processes. Instruction notes have been issued to improve efficiency and compliance in terms of the delay payments of creditors, as well as enhancing compliance and monitoring and improving transparency and accountability in supply chain management. We're convening the provincial SCM firms. Development of guidelines in terms of procuring from cooperatives are underway, as I indicated. Development of the SCM checklist to put focus on issues raised by the Auditor General. We have funding for the KTM assessment reporting. We have the SCM bilaterals and bi-monthly process meetings on 3-day payments directed. In the planned interventions is the introduction of the Provincial Budget Management Forum, investigating different options to deal with the tools in a phased approach, for example, by the top sliding. We are sourcing additional professional capacity to assist with the budget restructuring and reprioritization. And further reprioritization of the current year's financial budget in order to identify areas where we can either scale down, defer, or cancel intended projects that have not started, and to align the budget structures to respond to socio-economic challenges in the province. We also need to build capacity to benefit from alternative funding opportunities, and treasury they also should play a strong coordinating role. They have produced a guide to alternative funding, which sets out all the opportunities and facilities that are there through various embassies or grant funding. The departments do not actively focus on those sources of funding. There's a tendency to remain focused on whatever we get from through equitable share or conditional grant. And it's simply a matter of being more innovative. Then we have various mechanisms in place to report and review any corruption, fraudulent activities. We have performance meetings now with current transversal contracts in collaboration with departments to monitor contract performance. We monitor the trend in terms of contract performance, in terms of logos and reporting templates. We monitor the tender system in terms of tenders advertised and awarded. We are busy with the supply database purification exercise. And the process to implement recommendations based on the findings will commence soon. And the current investigations and disciplinary processes that are underway in provincial departments, the active ones in human settlements where disciplinary processes are ongoing. There are, I think it's 6 officials at senior management level and an additional 7. 6 are relating directly to the housing issues and 7 in or other matters. And then police rights and transport concluded all the disciplinary processes they were busy with. And then provincial treasury, there was an FIU investigation into a former Free State Development Fund, a moral regeneration movement. It comes from almost 2 terms ago, in the end from 2007. We only received the reports late last year. It was a very long investigation, so we are now just in the process of processing. the various reports and see what can be covered and what other action is needed. The 2013-14 budget in brief, we have approximately 84 billion to spend over the next 3 years. More than 2/3 of that will go to the social sector, health, education, and social development. There's about 13 billion in the NTF for infrastructure, and we indicate the health, education, police, road, transport, and human settlement. That's where most of that money could be going. 2013-14, our first quarter performance on other revenue, that fine sets it out, where there is already signed over and under collection in terms of our revenue. And I think we have already looked at the slides presented by National Treasury on the first quarter expenditure. And as indicated, we share the concern regarding the projections for the end of the financial year. And from the Provincial Treasury side, we've also raised it, equally helping with the Executive Council as well as CFO, to say that it really does not help us to come up with this thumbs-up figures that we all project we're overspending by billions at the end of the financial year. It's not making anyone any more nervous than we already are, because it's not going to happen, it's bound to happen. So there needs to be a lot of attention given to the quality of information that we put into our predictions and the statistics that we actually submit to National Treasury, because I think there is a broader concern that even from a municipal level and provincial level, we may be compromising the integrity of our national database of information. So that is something that we will be working with our CFO very strongly on to correct. And I think the PMG balances have already been covered. I think I should stop here today, Jefferson. Thank you.
CG, thank you for this presentation done by yourself as the MEC. You are quite new in this position. But a very important point, honourable members not here now, but honourable Monsieur May, is a picture of the accruals. That's one picture. Other picture is bank balance. And then if you look at the irregular unauthorized and wasteful expenditure, it's a third slide. So you must get the real picture at the end of the day. What is your fiscal position then? Thank you for the presentation. It's right in the time limit. All the members, questions? One of these.
Chairman, through you, thank you to the MEC for the presentation. Sorry to hear about your leg. I wasn't aware of it, but I did not wish it upon you despite our robust discussion at our last meeting. Chairman, the question of the acting CEO is somewhat symptomatic, I think, of institutional memory. Although probably not. Now, when someone's going to retire, as opposed to someone just resigning without notice, very clear notice, I would have thought that the new CEO would have been appointed prior to the retirement to give some kind of handover. So it's sad to see that we've got yet another acting, and perhaps the acting person will get the job. Mr. Chairman, the question of the Premier's budget, I'm astounded that the Premier's budget is 255 million versus the legislature of 205 million. So the Premier's office costs more than the entire legislature. And indeed, it costs more than 25% of the budget for human settlement of 1.089 billion. What exactly is the Premier's budget spent on? Can we have some detail there? I'm sorry, your slides aren't numbered, so it's very difficult for me to reference you, but on one of the slides, there's the question of own revenue enhancement.
And you can go to the page.
There's no page number. I'm sorry, I can't help you. Is it under revenue, own revenue enhancement initiative, And there's a comment there about agriculture and dairy facilities. Could I get some expansion on what that means? Is this one numbered?
Yeah.
It's a bit late, I'm afraid, for me to find it. Yeah. So you'll have to find it. I'm sure you'll recognize the comment. And then just building on that, could you tell us where in these expenditures and how much the funding of the dairy project, which has been so controversial, falls? I'm not sure. There's not a great difference, but in your provincial cash position, you stipulate an amount of 188.1, whereas National Treasury show 182 million. So there's a 6 million difference. I'm not sure why that is. And then on that same slide, could you just expand for me what you mean by that balance excludes unauthorized expenditure to be transferred and surrendered? Either it was cash in the bank or it wasn't the cash in the bank. Clearly it doesn't include accruals and all sorts of other future payments, but I'm not sure what that comment means when we're talking about a cash balance. I'm interested to know there's 1.8 billion in irregular expenditure, largely on roads, according to the comment. Can you expand on that and tell us more? I'm particularly interested in the roads that affect my province and my constituency very, very adversely, and that is the road that connects over Audley-Fries Hook Pass and has been under construction for some 6 or 7 years, and it's virtually impassable. There's a slide that refers to commitments, accruals, to suppliers, accruals, government, varying amounts. Can you just explain to me what those differences are? What's the difference between a commitment, an accrual to suppliers, and accrual government? 3.9 billion, 1.4 billion, and 0.8 billion. Then the controversial provincial website, where does it fall in these expenditures? Is this part of the Premier's 255 million? The 140 million that's reputed to have cost, can you confirm or clarify what it did cost? Who authorized that expenditure? And whether it's been investigated in any way at all and who's been held accountable for it? I'd also appreciate National Treasury comment on that particular issue, please. You referred to your disciplinary matters, the SIU investigation into your provincial treasury, but you're vague about what's happening right now. Surely the SIU investigation has some kind of outcome or recommendations, and people who might need disciplinary action. Could you expand on that for us? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That will be me for today.
Thanks, President. Without necessarily going into detail, Chair, I think one does need to raise just few things to say when you look at the measures and remedies that are being proposed. You tend to understand that Free State knows what needs to be done. But unfortunately, is that there are issues continuously. Issues of sustained unauthorized expenditures, irregular expenditures, accruals. They continue. And of course, is that Free State, I'm sure, it is almost normal, just like in Gauteng, to have service in historic projects. It's now almost a normal thing, almost every month, it's in Free State. But when it comes to the measures, the remedies, all of them seem to indicate that we know what needs to happen. Now, the question, of course, is that the budget or the arrangement in the province? When was it established? And is it giving results? The monthly or quarterly communications that Treasury is making to departments, when did this kind of meeting start? Are they making any inroad? And what sort of shape are they taking? If it is a fora of supply chain management, if it is a fora of the heads only, because like as you have heard from Treasury, I think the province is also confirmed on the turnaround of the senior officials. Do we really continue to have a meeting of supply chain, of the heads of supply chain in the province only, and when that head disappears, then you've got a totally new person who knows nothing about the system. That is more or less what one wants to understand. This forum, this committee, this structure, the manner in which provincial treasurer talk to the rest of the department when they have to spend or they have to start a particular activity that is budgeted for, how is provincial treasurer communicating this? And how is it monitoring that all what is required to be done to implement a particular program is done in time, and when it is slow, then that particular department gets conscientized, and when it is too far as well, and then a discussion is entered. How is this kind of communication happening? Because one thing for sure is the provincial treasury is like a choir conductor. If it doesn't conduct properly, then the baritone can just jump up and make the whole song. And now the question is, how is this happening? And then, of course, it's the question that I tried to raise before is where the provincial treasurer, when looking at the expenditures of the departments in the province, do you make any sense of these projects that are happening in the province? Is there anything that you are picking up, and then if ever there is anything that you can relate to the spending of departments or specific service provisions, and then what shape does it take to communicate that to the specific department? Do we have that kind of a service? And of course, is that not necessarily accounting on spending on conditional grants, because we may be in the wrong committee, but when it comes to the planning exercises, as the chair has already raised, and what are the challenges on spending on conditional grants, the planning, because the spending is a consequence of the planning. And if no planning have been done to implement them, then there will be no expenditure. Provincial treasurer, what role are you playing? Where you see a conditional grant that nothing is happening or it's not moving, what sort of intervention do you bring in to actually wake people that are asleep? I think that's all what I just want to get checked, rather than going to detail.
Thank you, Ombudsman.
Can the MEC share with us as to how many students have been assisted through the Bazaar scheme and the amount involved, as well as which departments facilitated that? And with regard to your provincial revenue envelope, I see there's a slight difference in terms of the figures that you have or the total amount transferred, and the one carried by the national treasury. Not slight as they say, but it's different in figures. The other one talks of 25.95, the other talks of 24%. But when you also include your own revenue, there are three figures that you provide in terms of the own revenue. On the slight revenue envelope, you talk of 820 million. 966 for 2013, 12, 13. And when you go on a slight own revenue by department, it gives you 833, 841. And then the slight own revenue performance for the last 4 years, it then gives you for this year a figure of 823. So you've got 823, 833, and 820. Which one is the correct one in terms of your own revenue? If you could reflect on that. I would also want your comment, if you could share some mind. Mr. Sishi, during his presentation, cited you as an example of one of the provinces that might soon experience liquidity constraints. So in light of what has been presented here, what is your comment on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
on page 34, it's only a short question, not a long one, without preambles and so on. Chairperson, I see that the MEC is saying investigations and disciplinary processes are undertaken. Now, in police, roads and transport, disciplinary process concluded. Can the MEC give us numbers of people that were disciplined, or what process is concluded? Human settlement, disciplinary processes ongoing. Can she give us more detail into that? And even in treasure, the last point, SIU investigation, can the MEC maybe give us more information on that? Because the heading is saying plans, systems to deter fraud and corruption. So it's very important if we want to address the financial issues. We need more information on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Let me see. We need the responses. We've got time until 20 to 12.
Thank you, Jason. I will try to address as much as I can, and then I will ask the officials to add if that is in order. I think I should start with the Honourable Member Bloom's question and try to go the reverse order or get to all most of issues. In police roads and transport, the matter related to the 23 road contracts. The officials will assist me. The former DDG and Chief Director of Roads were both dismissed, and I think three or four other officials resigned in the process, although they were not directly implicated in those specific contracts, but in other matters that emanated from the initial investigation into the 23 Roads project. On human settlements, I think I mentioned briefly senior management officials currently suspended. The disciplinary processes are continuing. I almost think two are concluded. It's just the final sanction that we are waiting for. And seven other officials are also suspended on matters that emanated from the main investigation, but that is not directly linked to the housing contracts under investigation. The SIU investigation into treasury emanates from 2007, there was a Free State Development Fund. The conceptualization was initially intended to support small business and stimulate provincial economic growth through various measures. The implementation, however, fell short. Now, by the time the investigation was completed and the report handed over to Treasury last year, there is not a single official left in Treasury who was involved in the establishment and operation of that Free State Development Fund. So we are now left at looking at recovery where possible. But the investigation took so long that the period in which debt prescribes has already expired. So we are either looking at criminal action where possible, and then that becomes then a burden of proof. But internal action is not possible because there are no officials left in the department who had dealt with that fund at that specific time. So we have allocated responsibility of the different project reports, and we're working together with the state law advisors to try to deal with each of these reports. It's a quite extensive report, and it's into separate projects that are funded. You may know some of them because you are familiar with the Free State. For example, there is a well that benefited in which FEC had an interest at that stage. There is a winery, for example, in the Southern Free State that benefited. So the report deals with each and every one of those projects. The circumstances are different. One person benefited, for example, was no longer in the country. It was not even a South African citizen, had a tiny benefit. So it's really looking at the details of each of those matters. But we're not talking hundreds of millions. We're talking maybe in total, the fund was 14 million in total. There's a lot of smaller projects that was supposed to benefit from funding, and that did get funding, but the implementation of processes were not well thought through. So we are dealing with that. We have met with the SIU and the state board advisors so that we have a comprehensive approach, and we believe that we need to bring these matters to close in the current financial year, just so that we deal with it once and for all. On the question of the commitments, the difference between the commitments and the accruals between suppliers and government, commitments are mostly orders issued for service and goods, but that has not been rendered. The capital expenditure approved and contracted, but not yet implemented, and capital expenditure approved that is not yet contracted. Those are commitments. And in the accruals of suppliers, goods and services, were rendered, but invoices were not received, and goods and services rendered, invoices were received, but not paid by year end. And accrual for government is goods and services rendered between government departments, and the processing of claims in between departments have not yet been finalized. That's the main difference. I think the member also had a question about the budget of the department of the Premier that is seemingly much higher than that of the legislature, for example. You should remember that in the Free State, the community development workers was transferred from COPTA to the Department of the Premier as a pilot project through the DPSA to see where they are better allocated, whether it would be the Department of the Premier or whether they should be with COPTA. So that whole component of almost 300 staff members moved over, and that does have a significant impact on the budget of the Department of the Premier. The issue of the website funded both by the Department of the Premier and COPTA, the Auditor General and the Public Protector are still in process of considering that matter, so nothing to comment too much so that we don't preempt either of the two's outcomes. On the Vrede Dairy, the indication I could give you is that the Department of Agriculture contributes 342 million over 3 years in three equal installments of 114 per year, whilst Estina, the partner in the project, contributes a total of 228 million. The total available funding for the project is 268.9 million, and the difference of 73 million is paid from cost. I'm sure we can give the member other information around the Frederevi project if he wants to engage further on that matter. We have worked on irregular and unauthorized settlers and wasteful expenditure together with the provincial accountant general. Last year specifically we had a new, we tried to implement a new approach. Whether it was entirely successful is a different matter. We, after year end, we called all the partners to say, now, just come and explain to us, how did you manage this? How do you manage to incur this in irregular, authorized, fruitless and wasteful? And each one had to account. And they were given clear time frames to say, go back, investigate that action. Because you can't keep on telling us that no one can be held accountable. The results at this financial year end suggest that apparently no one can be held accountable. So we need to go back and go and inspect to see what has subsequently happened. That we addressed old issues, and in this audit, new issues were identified that were categorized. Or where are we in terms of this? Because I don't think we've made sufficient progress. I think there is that slide.
Now what happened here is that
in Arzephal Creek, that there used to be a small area that was being operated, but due to limited funding, they could not continue with that particular project. And they approached Treasury to say that in terms of the revenue enhancement allocation, that we give them money to resuscitate that particular project where they will buy milk cows or whatever they are called and cattle feed and so on to try and resuscitate the particular business, also to produce and sell dairy products to their staff members as well as the community of Glen in general. So as I indicated, it is not related to Glen at all. In actual fact, the total request for this particular project was a small amount of 4 million. Let me just highlight that up with the revenue figure. Was an issue that the revenue figures, there's an issue there. Just want to indicate that the figure was corrected after the presentation was submitted. The correct figure that is in the handout for revenue for the 2012-13 financial year is 83.8 million. So that is the correct figure. The 823 was a preliminary figure that that was there but was corrected, like I said, before the presentation was finalized. In terms of conditional grant understanding, Provincial Treasury has established a subunit to monitor conditional grant spending on a monthly basis. Our challenge in terms of this is that we provide feedback, or we write feedback letters to the accounting officers indicating areas where there is slow spending and then where we actually request explanations and steps that are going to be undertaken by departments to correct this. And when necessary, these issues are escalated to executive authorities. The huge expenditure in conditional grant in 2012-13, as members would have been aware, relates to actually underspending by health, which was really a result of the mismanagement of cash and the available budget. However, as it was indicated on the side of cash, that there is a process that has been agreed into with the department to try and improve this, where the department has been allowed separate runs in the week, where in one day there will be a run for a run or based on equitable share, and then on another day there will be a run for conditional grant. I think Mr. Matro would elaborate on that particular issue if necessary. Thanks.
Honourable members, just on the matter related to unauthorized previous expenditure and also other transgressions on the audit outcomes, there was a provincial legislative position taken in March 2013 that before the end of August, especially we will analyze all the audit reports and then enforcement letters of FMA will be issued. And accounting officers will have 30 days to report to the Treasury on disciplinary actions taken by the department, by the accounting officer, and if we're not satisfied with the responses, then it will be escalated to the MECs. Next, we'll hand over to Mr. Mabilo on the cash.
Mr. Mabilo, 1 minute.
Thank you very much. On the issue of the different forums on the place, he just indicated they start at a technical level where the proprietary and the head of the supply chain, but from there the recommendations flow there to forward, which is a recommendation to forum of HODs, where then the comprehensive checklist that was indicated earlier by the MEC, where then we will report back to forward that these are the improvements and yes, this is where the department is not improving, and from there the matter has escalated then to forward. Last week we completed a round of bilaterals on supply chain, and the overall assessment was that there was an improvement in terms of reporting and compliance to certain legislative requirements. On the cash issue, the variance, it is subject to when the report was required. On the very same day, you may have a different investment figure subject to when the report required. So it's extremely important that sometimes when the investment amount fluctuates daily and it may reach a certain amount on a similar day. So that could be the reason for the variance. Maybe just then, okay, no, 2 minutes over, thank you.
Committee, you're done. Thank you, all the members, but Mashiri is very serious.
Yeah, there is only one thing. I think in the presentation of the MEC, there was a complaint in relation to the dwindling or reduction of equitable share. What is it based on? What's the complaint about it? And
this is the right forum to put your case on the Chani and then on the Bloom and Leaf. Oh, the one on the bursaries. How many? You have to correct a specific site after correction, submit the correct information into the committee. Because this becomes part of our report that goes to Parliament. Yeah, the former MEC was very proud of how they assist the municipalities and then the National Treasury blew a gasket in the bucket because they were never informed on the Bloom and Leaf.
Just a follow-up, Chair. On the response of road and transport, what was the amount involved in this, where the two DGs resigned, DG and what, the amount involved, and these others that have resigned, in other words, there's no action taken against them. They are scot-free. I want to hear the amount that was involved in this whole thing.
It's a direct question, I believe.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, I would appreciate a detailed submission on the Creator Dairy project, and if our secretary could ensure we get that. In terms of Glen Agricultural College and the dairy project, I mean, this is astounding that one can pour $4 million. If I had $4 million, I'd start a dairy and I'd make a profit. Now, an existing dairy requires another $4 million to get it going as a revenue enhancement project. Astounding. I don't know who made that decision, but I would think that needs investigation. Mr. Chairman, the real point I want to make is that is it not correct, MEC, that you signed off on this website and that you have to be held accountable here? And this is not sub judice. This is a committee of Parliament asking you a question, and you must now reply, please. Exactly how much has been spent on this website? Who authorized it? What is happening with it? This is not a forum for you to divert this to some attorney general, auditor general. Please answer the question.
Thank you, Deputy. I think we should start probably with the members' question that sort of slipped by the bursaries. So about 6,400 students at approximately $380 million a year. And the bursary fund is administered by the Department of Education. It's centralized there. This is now students at universities, technicons, all over the country. Yeah. 6,400 students. Yes. The budget, the whole provincial budget scheme. The budget for the provincial bursary scheme is with the Department of Education. The Honourable Member Bloom wants other details. The DDG and Chief Director were dismissed through a disciplinary process. They did not resign. Those two. I'm sure we can provide you with details of what you are requesting on now.
If you ask Steve this question and want more detail and you can't give it now, please then submit it in writing.
Yeah, and the officials are noting. The other three officials I indicated resigned as a result of other matters, not the 23 roads matter. We can give you those details as well. I'm just not It's not a challenge. The issue around the equitable share relates to the last census years and the impact of that. Our main issue that we have as a predominantly rural province, and I'm sure Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, provinces that's predominantly rural in nature will be raising it, is that the cost of service delivery in a predominantly rural area is not sufficiently taken care of in the equitable share formula. We like using the example of, well, we try to go and build a house in Mier, in the Northern Cape, and see how much of that allocation just goes towards transport, to getting the material to Mier, than if you were building a house in Joburg. It's an issue that provinces have been raising through a number of years, and I think that the latest recommendations of the FFC begins to address specifically that concern. But predominantly, the impact of the census results is what we are seeing in the MTF going forward with the amount of money that we are losing in years, after years of the current MTF. Then the last issue around the website, yes, I was the Director General of the Department of the Premier and the HB COCTA. We, as accounting officers, both signed off on the project. Not sure what else you want to know. And the total expenditure to date is 44. I don't know where the 140 million comes from. But I don't think it's going to be appropriate for me to go into other detail. I can give you my vision or my side of the project, and the HIV Cooper can give his side of the project, and the AD will come and give his side of the project. So it is not a question of avoiding the issue. It is a question of allowing Auditor General to conclude his process. I think the DA requested the public protector to look into the matter, and as far as we know, the public protector is looking into the matter. So I can say whatever I want to say, but they should have the space to do the, what they do.
As the issue being raised now in this committee, and after that report has been compiled, this committee will then call the specific role players to the committee to appear before the committee and take it in a step further. Because at this moment in time, we won't move on that. All the members, we must look at our time. It's all good, Councillor Natal. Thank you for the free state, MC Robbins, for your presentation. We are all human. We're going to have a comfort break for 10 minutes. It's a committee. Bring your tea to your desk and let me proceed with KZN, Shishi. We will bring you in again after the questions and deliberations, just to give you again. The FFC, I see, have left. The FFC MECs are busy with the program revisiting provinces, referring to their proposals on the 2014-15 division of revenue. So you must please engage with the FFC. One more member, 10 minutes, then we want you back, please.
Red, you are forever more cautious. We're very cautious.
But if we then turn to page slide 4, you would have the handout, I'm sorry. If we turn to slide 4, that just gives you the big picture of the provincial receipts, which of course consist of equitable shares, conditional grants, and provincial ownership. I won't go into details now, because the following pages will explain. Then total provincial payments, and you can see it's current payments, grants and subsidies, financial capital assets, payments of financial assets, and it brings you to the total. Then we had a surplus and or a deficit, that gives you that column. And then I'll go into the details as we then move to the text. And I'll speak to the details. The bulk of our receipts relate to our equitable share, as I've said, and the contribution of the equitable share to our revenue is 79.7%. You could say, well, it's 80%. Conditional grants is 17.2%, and our own revenue make up the 3.1%, and that gives you the 100% of own receipts. We are embarking on a very serious program. We have embarked on it. I shouldn't say we are embarking. We have embarked on a serious program of our own revenue enhancement. And I think this is also totally in line with what National Treasury urges us to do. And I'll say a bit more about that later. There is a small difference between the actual receipts of the unaudited actual shows that we received 14.81 billion conditional grant funding, which is slightly more than the final appropriation, and I'll explain that. It's not all grant funding in respect of the land care grant, education infrastructure grant, matric, participation and sport development grant, and then the Lady School grant is transferred to the province due to slow spending in that department. We are not particularly worried about the others, I'll tell you why in a moment, but I do agree with a comment from National Treasury that the land care grant seems to be one that our Department of Agriculture just can't get right. Because it's not massive amounts of money, but it is money. And as long as you have money to do something, you better spend it. Worth noting is that the second adjustment estimate was tabled on 26 March 2013, and we're quite proud of this, relating to an amount of 175.5 million in respect of education infrastructure grant, which was reallocated from the POPO to us because of poor spending in the POPO. Now, you will be aware, honourable members, that National Treasury is very tough now. It's a question of use it or lose it. And because we were spending very well on our education infrastructure and it appeared then that the public was not, an amount of 175 million was given to us very late in the day. You can see we had to pass the second appropriation 26 March, which was 4 days before the end of the financial year. But it had already been committed, so we were very happy to receive that, even if it only gave us 4 days. Then we couldn't include in the second reference estimate, because of late receipt of the notice from National Treasury, the devolution of property rights fund grant and the mass participation for development grant were reduced. Now, the bulk was the devolution of property rights. It was not a question of not paying property rights to municipalities. It was a question of when we requested for that, the size of that grant. There was an overestimation by the Department of Public Works of how much they would require to pay all the rates and taxes. And I must say, an extraordinary effort was made to the extent of actually physically going to municipalities and helping dig out any invoices that they might have for unpaid rates. So I think we are pretty safe, I believe, to say that if there's something that the municipality somehow couldn't dig out, it was not through lack of try. But it's then simply a question that the amount asked for was in excess of what we really needed, and that's how it was. And then the mass school sports was actually a very minor amount, and that 574,000 went to the Northern Cape. Then again, our own receipts, we over-collected. In the second bullet, you'll see we over-collected to the tune of 331.6 million, and we'll discuss it in more detail. So our actual receipts for 12-13 amounted to 86.019 million, compared to the final gross variation of 85.803 million, resulting in a surplus of 206.844 million. The unaudited actual provisional payments amount to 85.64 billion, and I'm obviously speaking now to their table, of which current payments is the largest proportion, 78%, followed by transfers and subsidies at 12%, and payments for capital assets at 10%. The surplus at the end of 12-13 amounts to 1.756 billion and comes from the province budgeted for the surplus. We took the strategic decision as the executive after it was in 2009, and it was the 8-9 financial year, where the province was in very serious financial distress. Serious, and I mean serious. And we then took a strategic decision to take ourselves out of that mess, which we managed to do in, I think it was 8 months, even to our own surprise. We did it much quicker and better than we thought. And as a precautionary measure, we actually now budget for a small surplus. Of course, that is from our equitable share. Should we not use it, it just gets reallocated in either the, some may be reallocated in the investment estimate, depending on our spending pattern. And certainly at the end of financial year, if there's any surplus, that it gets reallocated. But it's just a precautionary measure, because I think like our own private budgets, and I always think of what should I be doing, not that I may be doing it. What should I be doing with my own private finances? I shouldn't commit every last cent. And then when something unforeseen happens, you're in deep trouble. So we have this little cushion. I think it's what National Treasury calls a contingency reserve, which of course also exists within National Treasury. Ours is pretty conservative, but it's there. And it's one thing that our whole executive is totally committed to, because once bitten, you become very risk averse. And then, so there was the 900. There was the under expenditure of 509.194 in aggregate, and there was our own over collection of our revenue. Now, I think that's really it. I think we can then go to table 2. I think I've just spoken to all of those. Now here is our provincial overseas, which I've mentioned, that we over-collected. If you look in the second to last column on the right, at the bottom, we over-collected our own revenue to the tune of 301.645 million, which we were pleased about, because that then was available for reallocation for worthwhile projects and programs. We have put in place a team, especially with health, to make sure that we maximize the collection of patient fees. Because as you're aware, as a state hospital, obviously you have policies that provide for indigent people and children and so on. Now, we're not talking about that, people who can't pay. But there are thousands of people who are on medical aid schemes, your prisoners, your police, ordinary people, who actually can pay. And then whether you're on a medical aid scheme or not, if you are well off and you can afford to pay, you're supposed to pay. Now, we've identified that this is an area where at the different hospitals within the department, there are not watertight systems to, I think, identify the people who should pay. And even if I come in and I say, here's my medical aid, they don't seem to really be geared to say, oh, okay, you can get money back from medical aid. And we are now, we've established a task team jointly with Treasury and the Department of Health, and we believe that there are actually lots of millions sitting there that the province is not getting. So it's already picked up, and we will probably know by the end of this financial year how successful our intervention has been. Because the biggest challenge in the beginning is to make sure that there are systems. So that if you go to a private hospital, you could be on your left bed, the first thing they want to know is, are you on a medical aid? I think we've all had that experience. You're growing with pain, but they want the form filled in first in the medical aid card. Now, I don't think we want to be that much in the government hospital, but you have to have a system where you actually record those things and then claim that money back. So that's, we're working on that, and that, I think, is the biggest part of it. So we are hoping by the end of it, this financial year, we would have done even better on collection of own revenue, because it is ultimately a question of keep your eye on the ball. Slide, I think 9, 10, 11, something like that, gives you the detail of where the overcollection comes from, 9 and 10. I don't know if you have this in your hands. Would you like me to quickly run through where the overcollection comes from? It's an accumulation of fairly small amounts. It's main transport, provincial treasury, health, offices of premier, and education. I can maybe just mention why provincial treasury is over-collecting a very substantial amount of money. It's because we are now earning interest on a positive cash balance instead of paying interest. And believe you me, it's a very unpleasant experience when you're there. But I can, if you're happy, then skip to table 4, Chairperson, unless you want to plug up. Okay. If we then go to page, I can't see the page number, but it's table 4, which would be on the screen. Here is the expenditure analysis per vote. Now, if you look at the total at the bottom extreme right-hand corner, we have spent 99.4%. Now, the comments from National Treasury reminded me a little bit of a teacher who says to Johnny, who got 94% in a test, you can still do better. So the 0.6% is perhaps something where it is a bit of a moot point. Can you truly call it under expenditure? Because whether you like it or not, you will always have a certain number of accruals on your books. I am not for a moment suggesting you don't minimize it and try to keep it to a bare minimum, but it is not practically possible to think that every single service provider who rendered services in a particular financial year, let's say in March of 2013, would have submitted the invoice in time for processing. So that 0.6%, when you then look at the invoices that still keep on coming in, will probably take us to very close to 100%. But I think in a real world, you're not possibly going to have the pleasure of having the department in front of you who spent exactly 100.00 on their budget. It's not practically possible. So we'll try to do better, as our teacher said. Then, if I must now summarize the provincial expenditure, the underspending is 539 million, which is 0.6% because our budget's rather substantial. but compensation of employees was overspent by 432, mainly due to education and the carry-through effects of the shortfall in funding for OSD and the various wage agreements, as well as the carry-through effects of the conversion of 600 teacher assistants to teacher aid, provision for real incentivized posts such as mathematics and science. Because we all know that that's a perennial problem, that you don't get qualified math and science teachers to feel attracted to the rural area. Now, may I, Chairperson, you said earlier on in your opening comments that we can also talk to you about where you could assist as a committee. Now, I think we are pleading that these unfunded mandates, please, should not come our way. Because what happens at a national level, and we are not party to these wage negotiations and all the nice things that happen up there, and the union shake hands with a relevant department and everybody had a warm feeling, except people sitting in Treasury, and very often I know the same happens with National Treasury, but certainly at provincial level. We then have to implement wage agreements and all sorts of agreements like the OSD that have not been budgeted for. Now, and these things come with carry-through costs. They're not once-off. They come with serious carry-through costs. So education is still reeling under a number of years of shortfalls on OSD. Now, the latest one, and we have sent correspondence to the Minister of Finance, the latest one is the OSD in education for therapists. All the various therapists are, there was a wage agreement signed, I think, towards the end of last year, if I'm not sure I remember correctly, 2012. National Treasury knows exactly what I'm talking about. I think, and I'm speaking slightly out of correction, that even National Treasury was taken by surprise on that one. Yes, the answer is yes. The therapists quite correctly are saying that you must pay us. And most of these settlements come retrospective. You've got to now not only do it now, we calculated that if you now take the retrospective payment a couple of years back, I forget exactly when, it's millions that you're talking about. Plus, every wage agreement, OSD agreement, comes with carry through costs. So we have reached a stage where we actually say we are very tempted to say, as a province, we have not been given funding for it, so we cannot implement. But of course you risk labour unrest. You risk all sorts of things. And it quite unfairly, they come down to the provinces and we are then the bad people who can't implement. But the very latest one is a pure unfunded mandate. And I must say that in the last few years, the OSD shortfalls, National Treasury has made quite a lot of attempts to compensate for shortfalls that have accumulated over years. However, and we've very carefully done that analysis in a joint team Treasury and Education, they are still shortfalls, and we know it, and we can prove it. So, then our under expenditure is an improvement when compared to 11-12, so we're pleased about that. Three departments overspent, the most significant being health, that overspent by 99.6 million, which is a percentage of the budget, is quite minuscule. Transport at 6.5, provincial legislature at 1.9. Other 13 departments underspent, with several departments that are reflecting fairly minor underspending. Health, as I've said, most significant, and there are a whole host of the reasons there, which is in the presentation, so honourable members, I'm not going to assume that you can't read, because I know you can, so I won't go through every detail because of time. Transport, is there, legislature, public works, all the information is there. Economic development tourism has the largest under expenditure, and certainly in percentage terms, by quite a margin, and there are reasons for that. Provincial treaty, we also had our own under expenditure, the reasons are there. Education is the one where we feel quite proud that it's been managed so successfully, because midway through the year, they were heading for over a billion over expenditure, and we were very concerned. I think it was a bit before midway, and we could see the danger signs, and we then formed a joint task team with full cooperation from the MEC for education. We managed it down to a slight under expenditure, which we think in terms of management of budget and expenditure was quite a feat. I won't really spend much time on others. If I can move to conditional grants, have I done infrastructure? Conditional grants, here if you look at the total, if you look at the second slide, which we put on the board, if you look at the total at the bottom, our aggregate spend on conditional grants was 98.1%. So we're pleased with that, but let me say there are specific grants, the land care grant you've mentioned, if we go back to the first slide. That one is one where we are keeping a very close watch, because that one, as I say, it seems to somehow elude that department. There are a few in education, for instance, the technical secondary schools, the recap that we're also not happy with. Then the National Health Insurance Grant. This one is actually not the bulk of the problem. But be it as it may, it's generally a much improved picture from previous years, and we really focus on this. But there are specific grants where we don't feel happy. There has been a whole lot of rollovers. If I go to the text on slide 22, the devolution of property rights fund grant, I've spoken to this one, a rollover of 28.16 million in respect of disputed invoices has been approved by National Treasury. National School Nutrition Program, this one is really a tricky one. So this is why the full amount, or just about the full amount, has been approved by National Treasury to be rolled over. Because if you now think practically, the children keep on receiving meals until the last school day of March, and then your books close. Now those suppliers can only give the invoices in the new year, in the new financial year. So it's something that kind of is with us, and we've really thought, how can we avoid this? But it's a very difficult one, because you can't prepay invoices. You're not allowed to do that by law, as you would know. So you have to wait. Now, if I'm still serving food at school A on, say, the 31st of March, it's not possible for me to get my invoice out, get it through all the approvals and the signatures, and get it paid. It's impossible. And this is why, year after year, this one appears to be unfair, but that is why invariably National Treasury grants are all over on this one. So I thought I would just do that quick, because it sounds as if you're not giving the children their food, of course, but it's not true. The National Health Insurance Grant, it was received two invoices here, and so on and so forth. I will just quickly run through it. As I said earlier on, the technical schools, the recap grant, there was an underspending of 9.3, of which National Treasury approved 3.8 on slide 23. We're not happy that there is an amount that wasn't spent, because it's very, very important. I've spoken about Medicare, National Treasury is looking at it. AFCO, that's actually a very straightforward one. African Cup of Nations, you have to be on standby with medical services at the hosting province or the hosting country. There was an over-provision because there was an anticipated higher demand for medical services which didn't materialize. So it's a simple question of not enough people got sick to use that money. So we were actually quite pleased. So it goes on. Let me keep my eye on the time chair. Trying to see if there's something critical. Infrastructure, maybe if we go to slide 25. This one is a similar story. We have vastly improved here. And the one thing that we did as a province, we started that about 2 years ago. We were very concerned about spending on infrastructure, including conditional grants relating to infrastructure. So we had a little bit of a brainstorming session. Our planner was involved. We said, can't we have a crack team? Now, this is in addition to what National Treasury already provides in terms of infrastructure and support to province. So we actually established what's now been loosely or popularly called a crack team, consisting of various expertise in the built environment. They are not contractors. They don't come and do the work. You can say they are on contract to us as Treasury to provide a technical expertise from the planning phase, because that's, of course, where it all starts. If you don't plan properly, you can't have a bulldozer from site from day one. So we are really beginning to see the effects of this. They are in such demand that we've had to increase the budget for them, but we believe that rather than not spending infrastructure budget, it is money extremely well spent. The reason why you have to do this is because there is not the necessary technical expertise. We've spoken about financial theories and so on. The same applies to technical expertise in departments, your engineers, your project managers, etc. So this is what this team did. And because of the success and the demonstrable success in the provincial departments, we have now also extended that to the municipality. Because, incidentally, there was a question around service delivery earlier on. I think a lot of the issues are not sitting at the provincial government level, sitting at municipal level, where there is money for service delivery, and it's just not being spent in 95% of cases. Anyway, so we're now extending that service to that. And, of course, the same applies there again. It's 98.9%, which, of course, is the correct figure. But infrastructure is also one of the things that you will not be able to pay every single invoice due because some things are still being done at the end of the month. So you only get the invoices in the following month, beginning of the new year. That's what I'm saying. With the best will of the world, you will never completely avoid accruals, although I'm not for a moment saying you should keep them to a minimum. Then again, the reasons for the underspending is there. In a number of instances where the money has been committed, it will of course be rolled over. So I won't take you through the text, but it's all there, and we're keeping a very close. Oh, I think, Chairperson, I've slightly exceeded the time, but I'm now on the page that says, thank you. I don't want to deprive you of question time. It's rather deal with questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, MEC Cronier, for your presentation and the position of KZN. That one concern that I have is the overexpenditure by the Department of Health, which is over 99 million. Now, I believe the Health Authority, provincial legislator, and the provincial treasury and national treasury for assistance to get through the financial year. So you are here. We've got a situation here. raise. Other members? Wait.
Knowing
that as this particular month, this is what we expect to pay to the municipalities, and we know it later, dependent on the properties that you own and that you are managing. But it looks like public works in that province is not assisting them. And Chair, the other one, of course, as well, is the question of expenditure on infrastructure and cleaning. And it looks like it's not necessarily a question of systems, but it's a question of personalities or something in that area. Because you go to one department on infrastructure, they are overspending. They are almost spending like half. And then there are all the other departments on infrastructure. Then there are other spending. And therefore, it looks like if we've got all the same systems of procurement or supply chain in the whole of the KZN administration, then one can just read that towards personalities in those departments. It's either somebody's over strict, somebody's over lax on the systems of procurement. And it's something that needs to be dealt with. Where you've got the real billions to be spent, people are even overspending. Then you will be expecting that it's too much for the officials. The livelihood is under expenditure, but they are overspending. And where you've got less amount of infrastructure, the amount to be spent, the people then they are underspending again. So there is a problem of real officials that's happening in the other the system itself.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I just wanted, I wanted to request that Treasury comes up with a solution on this unfunded mandate all provinces, the whole government is struggling with. That's an ongoing between particularly municipalities that have to do work that they claim is an unfunded mandate. I think there's still a big grey area question mark on that. And then I think just a point that I want to note on the education is clearly also that the increases that the departments have to live with in education is not necessarily linked to productivity. Wherever the forums discuss these increases, which is passed on to the budget. I want to just, Honourable Chair, look at the underspending on that school nutrition program. The 93 million. I want to ask if there's a date that the service providers must submit their invoices. If there's a cut-off date, say 2 weeks after the closing of the financial year. Because if I heard you correctly, you were saying that, you know, you can't get it 100%, but I'm sure, as the member previously have spoken, that unspent money is then of course becomes a rollover. But if invoices are not submitted on time, it can't be classified as a rollover. It's money that the project was completed, the work was done, since the invoice was not submitted on time, if you have a cut-off date. I think you should have been a cut-off date. So that 2 weeks after the financial year, whatever comes in at that week, then should be accounted into that end of the financial year, which will then assist with the balance of the books of the spending for that financial year. That's my understanding of how one could assist in getting the members at closer balance with closing of the books. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Chairman, thank you. Thank you, MEC. Thanks for setting a good example with such a small team from my province. On slide 9, I was hoping that the amount of overcollection that didn't come from speed fines and other such transport issues that it wasn't.
Traffic officials are very vigilant in that province.
Yeah, the average speed timing on the M3 irritates me no end, but I just stick to the speed limit. Mr. Chairman, I'm waiting down here, but the provincial treasury, I'm curious about the reasons for the underspend on infrastructure and provincial treasury, and wondering why the reasons for that are to do with airports, what for the other ones, I can't remember. But they, what was Provincial Treasury going to do with those projects? Let me just leave it at that. I'm sure you understand the question. And then the LACDAG grant, I'm not sure what's happening in agriculture, because on the one hand, we've got a lot of money being wasted on seed and fertilizer, which is dumped and then rots and doesn't get used, and farm equipment that lies for a year rusting. But then here we have money that's not spent. So there seems to me to be a problem with financial control there in agriculture. Thank you.
I think that I'm covered. Mr. Leeds was congratulating the MEC, but he was also telling me that he drove from KwaZulu-Natal in a Toyota. I don't know is it true or not, but congratulations. You see, congratulations, yeah. But there's a disturbing media clip that I'm having here about your province, and the provincial director general is saying that the health department is in trouble. I can give you, because it's here. Yeah, so that you must respond. But congratulations. I hope that you are flying back, not driving back.
Thank you. Johnny?
Just one question. I appreciate the report. The premiers of 5.7 million for renovation of his apartment. To me, that sounds like a completely new building. Is it renovation, as I understand it to be, or is it, does it include refurbishment and upgrading?
No, the premier's house. Yes. The MCP just concluded a visit to KZN, a few municipalities, Mshinga, Kuntu, etc. Yeah, Newcastle, Dundee, Greytown, Tugela Ferry, just to mention a few council. But specific at the Tugela Ferry Town, there's issues regarding, and the area there, agriculture. You won't be able to answer it now, but when this report is compiled, you will have to lay your hands on that, because it's about the spending of allocated money for specific projects. And when we were there now, we were quite amazed what did not happen. Since we were there the previous time. I'm just bringing this to your attention. You can take it further when this report has been adopted by the NCP. Because the money actually comes from the provincial treasury to those specific departments. Your role in oversight over that MEC, you may respond.
Chair, I'm just going to make a few comments and just deal with a few. Then I'm going to ask HOD Magagula to deal with the rest. I'll be very brief. I'm fully aware, and I'm looking at slide 11, the one that speaks to summary of provincial expenditure, which comes to 99.4. That is an aggregate, of course. We understand that fully. And that way we reflect in those columns the specific percentages spent by the department, and then we give readings for it. I think the point I was trying to make, and hope made, is that out of a budget of 86, 1.825252 billion. We have spent 99.4%. And it is indeed a very good record. The amounts not spent are minuscule in respect of what has been spent. Same applies to our infrastructure. And I understand that according
international treasury figures, and the gentleman is here, and correct me if I'm wrong, we are in fact the best spending province on infrastructure. We have improved vastly. We want to be 100% in all respects. But we are asking that we see it in the context of what is a percentage of 86.182 billion and what is a percentage of a budget that's not even 500 million. Because these things have to be taken into account. Be that as it may, we can also agree to differ on that. Department of Public Works, I think, you're going to deal with that one, but I think I really would not want them to be seen as people who did not do things properly. I should deal with that. On the NSMP issue, you see, I understand what you're saying, and it's something that we have really applied our minds to. How do we actually minimize the invoices that cannot practically be paid? And we've looked at different systems and so on. The reality is, and you'll be aware of this, that you cannot, in law, pay as government for a service that has not been rendered. So this is why I use the example. Let's say the 31st of March is a Friday, just for argument's sake. Now on that Friday, the schools will still be receiving meals. And there is no possibility that that invoice can be in for payment in the same financial year, because we normally inform all departments that receipt of invoices are enclosed on the 15th of March normally. It's normally around there. Some of them. But like we try and then not have this last push at the last minute. But some things are simply not possible. If you talk about contracts, let's say a contractor is busy building a road, for argument's sake. You pay in tranches as the milestones in the contract, you see. Now, let's say, I mean, they would still be working flat out on the last day of the month. It's not possible to get it in. That's the point I'm trying to make. I am not, under any circumstances, and I think I made that clear, saying that you should withhold invoices deliberately. I know that's a ploy that's very often used to balance the budget. We didn't have to do it because we had enough money to pay those invoices. So it was clearly not a ploy. But it is a fact that we can still do better, for sure. But I think some things, unless and it would be really good if somebody can come up with a suggestion of how you deal with this NSMP. We've discussed this with National Treasury, and you can see from the fact that they, year after year, quite comfortable to roll over practically the full amount, that there's a recognition that this is indeed a tricky one to deal with. And because it's feeding for children, you can also not say from the 15th round feeding. You know, can you imagine the outcry and the consequences of that? It's a tricky one that we're working on, and I'm sure actually Mother Guda will say something. I think the cities, on a similar lighter note, I always say on own revenue, I'm in a bit of a dilemma. Do I encourage you to gamble more? Do I encourage you to drink more? Do I encourage you to speak? Because then we get more money, you see. It's a moral dilemma. It's a moral dilemma. But that's on the right hand note. Premier of the Office of Residence, actually will deal with the technical side, but let me make one thing very clear. It is not the house in which our Premier lives. He owns his own house and pays for his own house. Parkside is the official residence. It's in fact a national monument. I can't remember exactly to which year it dates back, but I think people from KwaZulu-Natal, it's a complex. It's a massive complex in the center of town. It is just the name is Parkside Official Residence of the Premier, because that's how it's designated. He does, in fact, not live there, nor does his family live there. He uses it when there's a foreign delegation where he meets them or something like that. You know, so I don't think we should get an impression that our Premier is getting the state to fund. private residence, because
no,
it's
I
not.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even live there. Okay. But on the technical 5 million and so on, but it's an estate. It's a huge estate. It's not a little house somewhere. Then on the Tuyera Ferry and so on, I do understand that you didn't expect us to respond now. But if you could maybe just clarify one thing for me, is it money that is supposed to be spent by the municipalities or the... But I'll look at the report. I've listened carefully to what you've said. Thank you.
Thanks, the chapters and honorable members, LSC and colleagues present. Let me just deal with a few. Chairperson, you raised a comment earlier on before the impacting the house around health spending. And I think what just generally, we'll have to say it in this house, that the two things that have happened in health, the improvement on the infrastructure planning ability to then deliver on infrastructure is actually putting more pressure on their budget on the capital side. On the other side, on goods and services in particular, health, because of KZN being the province with the massive amount of people in the antiretroviral drug therapy program, and you can't take people out. It's one of those programs where once you can't say, look, we're running out of budget now, therefore let's reduce the numbers that you already have in the program. It's also putting quite a bit of pressure on health in general. That's just by the way of comment, but a detail can really be given. But it's one department where it's changed from what it used to be. Previously, health actually brought down KZN to its knees financially, but they couldn't quite show how they could cause the overspend. But even service delivery, you ain't quite seeing it in the speed and the pace at which you're seeing it now. And now they're doing well, but then they're doing well of them rather than putting substantial pressure on their budget. Honorable member, public works and number estimation, they may take a slight blame, but by and large, what happened was, as you remember, this started as a conditional grant, and we're very insistent as provincial treasury to say, let it be a conditional grant until we are ready as provinces to get it then and divorce into equity and share. So in the process, what then public works at least in the province today, to really get a feel of how much should we really pitch this grant at, they then asked municipalities to say, your area of jurisdiction, please give us your property role with the properties valuation role. Thank you very much. That's it. So we got the valuation role. The long and the short of it, that the error would have been in the valuation role of the municipality, that would have been inflated. And things change because the valuation role gets challenged. Challenged and then changes how it actually gets reduced. So that's a long process. So when somebody went and put a pitch for the amount that it thinks it needs, it was slightly inflated. Which is why I think they were very noble in saying, look, there is an over-provision here that will be done. Because as we now continue to pay verified, authenticated invoices coming out of the municipality, it's been now almost 2 or 3 years in planning, this is over-provided for. So let's relinquish the funding to national. Let me deal maybe with the... I'll just come back and I remember on your two comments you made about unfunded mandates. It's really... So long we run an ITR system that's like ours, there will always be a discussion around those. So unfunded mandates as well as the issue of productivity, particularly as it relates to education. The point is taken, I think National Federal tried to make this point. That, in fact, I would even broaden it and say in the public service in general, I'm not so sure that there is a consciousness when it comes to salary increases vis-a-vis productivity improvement of the public service. I think the two have don't quite talk to one another. And I think if we are able to have a methodology that allows that to happen, it would be a lot more straightforward. Then you won't say public servants are overpaid or underpaid. It will all be based on the extent to which they are productive. And that's just how we incentivize a workforce, even in the private sector. Treasury and airports, it's a very good question, I remember. In fact, from time to time, we ask that question ourselves, but our plan. It really is a question of, if somebody doesn't do it, who will do it? Now, this is how we started our involvement in airports. When the old airport moved from the South Basin towards the north, it became really costly for the civil servants to really move around the country in doing their public duties, so to speak. Because Maritzburg was closer to the one down south, and then it's now further upstairs. Now the claim that you would then encounter by people just going to the airport were really substantial. And this was at the time we were also implementing our cost-cutting measures as a province. But then we thought, but we have an outside high-tech zone, which is like within Peter Maritzburg. Why can't we revamp this asset, put the infrastructure that is needed so that it can service the public sector? Because Maritzburg is a capital city, and there's a lot of truck volume, sort of passenger volume between particularly Pretoria and Peter Maritzburg. A cost-saving measure. And it turned out to be something really, really useful. Now, unfortunately, no sooner have you done that, because all of that you've created precedent, and then all regional airports, they're mainly owned by municipalities. They all thought, no, look, we also needed some kind of an injection here and an injection there. But unfortunately, that because the money sits in treasury, because we couldn't, we don't trust their money to this fund, because it finds its way elsewhere, I bet, in some of these things. So we keep it in our boat. But then they claim, so they do the procurement, then they run the project is at a particular state, then they build the provincial treasury, and then etc. That work sometimes goes slower than anticipated, hence the underpinning then on this infrastructure. But the point is quite correct. In fact, even within the province, we've been asked what else doing in airports. But if you just look at what has happened in that specific airport, quite frankly, I'm not ashamed that at a point treasury did something in airports. In people respect, the volume, the profitability even of the airport itself, which was not the case as before the intervention. Land caravan spending, it is a problem. To be honest, I think honorable members have the fingers on the pulse on the thing. It's something that I particularly, because this is a good project for EPWP, because it's fixing some donors so that you know you don't encourage a rolling, and it's really minor labor, unskilled, and so on and so forth. But the spending here is a problem. It just says something maybe about the sector or about the people that run the program. And we've got to own up. I really don't have much defense other than to pretty much agree with the members that there is an issue to be sorted out with agriculture. Chair, I think I've dealt with the other issues. The renovations are probably more like rehab, complete overhaul, because even the roof has been, the whole building has been condemned by public works. So the people asked public works to do an assessment, and then they came up. It's been 2 years now. Yes. So they then gave us the builder quantities in terms of how much it will cost to then bring it back to this state. And also bear in mind that it's a heritage site, so they, you know, even doing things slightly getting more specific on things you can't demolish, that things you can't touch, and so you could find a clever way to move around it, and the cost sort of increase a little bit. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Chair. I think there's a number of things that have been said, but let me say that we've noted, I mean, from my part, I've noted a number of the comments. I know yourself made comments all about health, and these are things that we're working on. But I just want to make, with your permission, Chair, just a closing thing, is that one of the things that we've learned, and I guess we're all learning in this sort of road for a number of years, and one of the things that we have continued to be learning over the last recent while is that fiscal health is not primarily about money. Fiscal health is about decisions. That's what we saw in Limpopo. And that's what we saw actually in KZN as well. Where you had provinces with huge overdrafts, major crises coming out of this crisis because of a change in decisions, not in additions of money. We didn't add 1 cent in bailouts to any province. When we went into Limpopo similarly, and now they've got strong fiscal health, notwithstanding other problems that they might have. I think the problem that we find is that there really are two ways in which these decisions about fiscal health can be made. They can either be made by choice or they can be made via a crisis. We hope that people make them by choice. and not have to go through a crisis that acts as some sort of catharsis to these things. And that's the question that I think everyone has been asking and saying. Problems of the finance of in a tight situation, are they going to make the right choices? Are we going to have to wait for a crisis on these things? The minister was in the Free State a couple of weeks ago. He addressed the ESCO and he made this point about decisions and about the fact that you make the right decision and you'll achieve the right result. KZN had more than 5 billion rands in the red at one point and they made the right decision, turned it around. Gauteng Health, you know, 2, 3 billion rands at one stage in the red. This year, for the first time since 2004, they've underspent their budget. Similarly, Limpopo, and so on and so forth. So provinces like the Free State, you know, from our perspective, is exactly the same situation. We read about bursaries. Can these bursaries be afforded? Because we've got national bursary schemes and financial assistance schemes that are highly performing. So is this something that can be afforded? KZN is a delegation of 2,500 people from the Free State. So it's about decisions, you know, and what we're appealing is for provinces to make the right decisions that they will achieve as well. They don't need more money from the fiscus. And the fiscus is under pressure, as everyone knows, because of the global economic conditions that are affecting fiscal resources of government. It is important that government changes the way that it does business so that it can become more efficient and deliver more with less. So I think that's the message that the minister has been delivering. And I think it's important that we reiterate it for the purposes of this, this deliberation. Thank you, Chip.
Thank you, Mr. Hizi, on the machine said seconds.
Chair, I just wanted to make one comment, Chair. Not misunderstand an argument. Chair, what I'm just trying to raise, Chair, is that, you know, we just need to really be conscious of looking at aggregate figure. Because when you look at aggregate figure, you actually deny yourself an opportunity to look at detail. Where you have to take specific actions. Because aggregate seems to hide information and present a picture that everything is well when not everything is well. Like the page that I'm talking about on this expenditure analysis. You're sitting with a certain departments that are underperforming. The provincial treasury, you've got community safety and then you've got, I think it's public work, and then, but on the aggregate, they are marked by the departments that are performing correct, 100%. They actually pull them up on an aggregate to a position that says, no, the province is performing. And when you've got that kind of a message, then it makes people to actually relax their guard. And where you've got that particular weakness, then continues to go down. The same thing is on the infrastructure that we've been talking about on page 20. I think it's page 25. It's the same thing. In the office of the premier, you've got a spend of 43.3%. But then you've got the other departments going to 107%. And that 107%, in terms of numbers, it brings the other one up to a healthy percentage. But whereas it's not correct, you don't have an even expenditure and say all the departments are spending 98% or 99%. You've got others spending 100%, another one spending 50%. And you have the problem with that one that's spending under 50%. Because it depends what services are you getting on that one. And if it is crucial services, people will be asking for the whole province because of failure of that one. Whereas you've got 100% performance on some of the departments that may not be directly linked to community. So all what one is just asking Chair is that it is important for Treasury to actually pay attention to detail so that the correct messages are sent to the relevant departments to correct where they're supposed to correct. That's the thing that I'm just raising here and there. And also, of course, the issue of the property rate or whatever. I still believe that public works must be a custodian of the properties that are under their management, and they must be knowing what is happening. If a specific municipality do a new valuation role, they must walk in there and say, what are the situation of our properties? They should not wait when the invoice is left flying across around. But if they wait and they use the municipality valuation role and then go and argue later when an invoice is in front of them, then they are not doing their work. That's my understanding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mashile, for that remark. Other members, when we started this engagement with the nine provincial treasuries, we said whether our objectives will be, I said it this morning, good governance, sound financial management, and a hands-on approach. That's where parliaments are all coming. The engagement with provinces to get that hands-on approach. Through our reports that are tabled and adopted in parliament, goes to the executive, national and provincial, to take us and to take the country forward. We will engage with the nine provinces again in the last fourth quarter of this year. We're dealing with Limpopo in a bit different way in terms of section 102C of the constitution. And there was progress. But everything cannot be measured financially. There are the practical sides as well, referring to implementation. So thank you to the Free State MEC Rockman and to DZN MEC Grenier with your teams honoring this meeting. We will see you again in the fourth quarter, November. I don't know when we will adjourn yet, depends on what's happening outside. But we will conclude our work then for 2013 with our engagement. What happens now is we got now from the nine provinces the overall picture of spending. And this is where the Appropriations Committee comes into now and zoom into, say, agriculture or public works, because we share the same membership, the same people sitting there. It's just the chairpersons. That makes our work a bit easier. Also in terms of our oversight, just to give you that background. And our report will also be forwarded to you as MECs for finance, as well as the Minister for Finance, although members, that brings us to the end of the session. That's part of today's meeting. We are convening again at 2 o'clock when we deal with protocols and international agreements, and SARS will then address us to take us through that. So we are suspending the proceedings until 2 o'clock. So